Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
On the Google Calendar, and in fact, tomorrow we will have permaculture guru Benjamin Farr. This is his last time on the show, so please do listen in. Thank you for giving me part of your day, and remember, we change tomorrow by changing today, and we have to because tomorrow really matters. Tell a friend, and stay tuned now for the Peter B. Collins Show, coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. It is a bear market.
This is the first time in 6 years that the Dow has closed below the threshold that signals a so-called bear market. We have both the Dow and NASDAQ 20% below their record highs.
CBS's Alexis Christophorus, Peter Brown at Automotive News.
For the next couple of years, it's going to be ugly financially for General Motors no matter what they do.
Oil prices, a drumbeat of bad news for a lot of people. GM in the spotlight.
The most dependable.
Stock prices today were down all around, but the Dow off nearly 167, but GM closed about $10 a share. Oil prices hit $144 a barrel, and Robert Bryce at Energy Tribune magazine says speculators are one thing. Global demand is an inexorable force.
China's demand in the first quarter grew 16% for refined products. There is just not that much oil available on the market to be bought.
Running restaurants costs more these days, with everything from foodstuffs to shipping getting pricier.
Running a restaurant is getting more and more expensive. As fuel prices go up, so does everything else.
And if it hasn't gone up this week, trust me, it will go up next week.
So the Hurricane Seafood Restaurant in St. Petersburg, Florida, now charges for things that used to be part of the package. Co-owner Bruno Falkenstein says it's 50 cents for fries with that burger or piece of fish.
10 cents. Charge for the lettuce, 10 cents charge for the tomatoes, 10 cents charge for the onions.
He says customers have been mostly okay with it since many wound up not eating those items anyway. Now they just pay for what they want. He says it cuts down on waste. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
What's a family to do when it's so hard just filling up the gas tank?
To go down and see everybody would have been a great opportunity, but it just financially just wasn't. Doable.
Julie Jacobs in Baltimore, one of millions planning staycations this summer, stay-at-home vacations. Big success today for the Colombian military. They took back from the leftist group FARC 15 hostages, some of whom had been in jungle captivity for 6 years. General Freddy Padilla is Colombia's chief armed forces commander. He says his military spies tricked the rebels into giving up their hostages without a single injury. There weren't that many people left in Big Sur, California, since the first round of evacuations. Today, more mandatory move orders after the wildfire jumped a major fire break and threatens the town again.
We will waiver replacement fees for birth certificates, driver's license, and other critical documents, and we are cutting red tape to speed up cleanup and debris removal.
That's Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Hundreds of fires still burn in California. It'll be weeks before they get a handle on them all. The Musicians Hall of Fame adds Buddy Holly's band, the Crickets, this year.
Oh, well, I love you, Dallas. I love you.
Southern soul music is the focus this year, with Booker T and the MGs, the Memphis Horns, and the Muscle Shoals Rhythm Section, inducted in October in Nashville. This is CBS News.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 30% too. From July 2nd through the 7th, save at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. Save up to 30% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. We're open July 4th, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., so hurry in and save for painting, decorating, and great savings. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Don't miss Lowe's July 4th event. Get 10% off major appliances priced at $397 or above, $5 off 1 gallon, or $20 off 5 gallon qualifying Valspar paint via mail-in rebate. Ask for 12 months special financing on purchases of $299 or more when you use your Lowe's consumer credit card, and get entire house carpet installation for just $99 when it's special order Stainmaster or Premier Living carpet and pad purchased from Lowe's. Lowe's, let's build something together. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only. Credit offer available from June 26th to July 7th.
In a lot of trouble for cutting the mayor some slack.
This is what we're going to do, okay? Bring me home, please.
It was this embarrassing video of a suburban New Orleans mayor being stopped on the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway that led to two cops being fired and two more resigning, including the chief of the Causeway Police. Mandeville Mayor Eddie Price is seen crashing through a barricade at a closed toll booth and then telling officers to go easy on him.
We're going to go ahead and let him make this big deal, okay?
And despite his admission he'd been drinking, no field sobriety test, and they let someone take him home. Only days later, after the controversy went public, he was ticketed for a minor charge. Dave Cohen for CBS News, New Orleans.
They figured out where the fleas came from in Pulaski, Virginia. People went to the courthouse and wound up scratching flea bites, especially on the first floor. Turns out a sick possum had crawled under the floor and died, became a breeding ground for fleas, not to mention the smell, before the maintenance workers figured out what and where it was, and they finally got it out of there. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 30% too. From July 2nd through the 7th, save at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store. Save up to 30% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. We're open July 4th, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., so hurry in and save for painting, decorating, and great savings. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
All right, 35 and a half inches wide for the new refrigerator.
And then if you could do me a favor and measure the back splash over here.
If we can get everything done on the first project, then we can move on to the second one and have time to enjoy the three-day weekend.
It's time to blast through July 4th weekend. Get 10% off all appliances of $399 or more. Find top brands like GE, Maytag, and LG. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through July 9th in U.S. only. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. It's great to have you listening. Later this hour, we're going to get some comments on Barack Obama's recent moves to the center or to the right. Mike Lux, a progressive activist from Washington who blogs at openleft.com, will join us in about half an hour. But first, the situation in Pakistan and Afghanistan is deteriorating. More U.S. combat troops have been killed in Afghanistan this year than in the entire war and occupation there. And the tensions between Afghanistan and Pakistan continue to grow. For comment today, we turn to Adrian Levy. He is a senior correspondent for the British newspaper The Guardian. And earlier this year, he published a book co-authored with Catherine Scott Clark called Deception, Pakistan, the United States, and the Secret Trade in Nuclear Weapons. And if you want to know the real story about A.Q. Khan, the father of the Pakistani nuclear weapon, and the proliferation of his ideas, technology, blueprints, and materials, this is the book, Deception, and I recommend it to you. Adrian stayed up late in London to talk with us tonight, and thank you for that, Adrian.
It's a pleasure. It's nice to be back with you.
Nice to talk with you, sir. And as I referenced, there have been quite a few incidents in recent weeks. The Afghan government of Hamid Karzai has leveled a sharp accusation that Pakistan's equivalent of the CIA, the ISI, Inter Services Agency, attempted to assassinate him back in April. They say they have proof from laptop computers and intercepted emails and things like that. And in the meantime, efforts to deal with the
growing threat of the Taliban inside Pakistan have led President Musharraf to dispatch both troops and paramilitary forces into some of the areas near Khyber, and that is in the Northwest Territories, as I understand it, in Pakistan. What are some of the other key developments that you would bullet for us right here, Adrian, as we begin our conversation?
Oh, there are so many grim ones to go through. I think if we start off with something which affects the backdrop of all of it, first of all, we've got the revelations that on a computer in Switzerland were found encrypted files that contained a schematic for a warhead that definitely emanated from Pakistan, a schematic that was being, it is presumed, put up for sale by a group of people working for the AQ Khan network.
Mm-hmm. That's a father and two sons on that team, right?
Absolutely, the Tinners.
Tinners, yes.
And they're linked to a trial that's going on at the moment in Stuttgart, Germany, where another one of AQ Khan's German Confederates is currently undergoing trial, accused of trying to supply Pakistani nuclear technology to Libya. But then back to Pakistan, we've got the nuclear backdrop all the time. We've had a devastating friendly fire incident, if we could call it that, whereby U.S. munitions resulted in the death of 11 Pakistani soldiers right on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, ramping up tension between the two countries. After that, there's been a whole series of reports that have come out from the Pentagon and Pentagon affiliates, which have suddenly begun to highlight the reformation of al-Qaeda and Taliban elements inside Pakistan. And to listeners of your show, this will all seem like very old news, as, of course, everyone's been warning of this throughout Musharraf's tenure, particularly from 2004 onwards. But at a time when he was greatly loved by the Bush administration, that news was not welcome. And now that he's weak, that news is beginning to come out. Elements of the military in Pakistan and the intelligence establishment appearing to dabble with extremism and the jihadist element. And then on top of that, quite incredible news, one of Pakistan's great cities, Peshawar, in the northwest frontier province, suddenly under siege from pro-Taliban militants led by a former bus driver, and they themselves the subject of military action this week. And then in the last and perhaps only ski resort in Pakistan in the Swat Valley, it was burnt to the ground by other militants allied to the Taliban, or the Pakistan Taliban, who are trying to set up their own kind of Islamic state run by Islamic law. And the same happening in the North Waziristan and South Waziristan, the badlands that border Afghanistan. So much tension, so many different conflicting reports, and it's important, I think, to put context on all of these at some point.
So, Adrian, let's start in Peshawar, where there have been conflicts going on for almost a week now, and we have Pakistani forces, and apparently they have dispatched paramilitary forces. Why is Musharraf operating in this manner as he tries to push back these Taliban and Taliban-related rebels in this part of his country?
Yeah, I think we should distance Musharraf from this in the sense that he is now a very weak figure, and his role has diminished greatly. And what we're seeing over the last 2 weeks is a raising profile for the new civilian government led by Prime Minister Gilani, and his what appears to be positive relationship with the new military chief, General Kiani, and between the two of them, and of course with other security agencies in Pakistan, they are trying to put forward a counterinsurgency strategy, very much the one that belatedly came to Iraq. And this counterinsurgency strategy has several facets to it. Yes, they are attempting to use military force to push back a group that may be up to 2,000 strong that have been coming right into the city of Peshawar, abducting people, burning down girls' schools, and creating lawlessness and a real fear in Islamabad about the impinging of the Taliban. But it's also being attempting to shape this policy with other key elements to it, increasing security in the area, calling for massive investment in education, de-radicalizing these madrasas or religious schools, things that Musharraf said he was doing since 2001, and of course we're now discovering, now that he's weaker, of course, never happened during his tenure. The other critical thing to identify here, and I won't talk for too long on this subject,
go ahead.
Despite the almost $11 billion of USA that was pumped in former Sharif as the number one ally in that region for the war on terror. It's, of course, becoming blatantly clear now that that money was directed towards causes close to Musharraf and not in the fight on terror. But she, all of that money, the lion's share of it, went into weapons which were useful for the Pakistan military to face down India rather than countering insurgency, rather than countering the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda elements inside Pakistan. And, of course, a good deal of that money also vanished, as we now know from General Accounting Office reports and reports from the CIA. And I kind of think this is the legacy that's beginning to brew from all of this support for Musharraf and questions support for him, rather than support for Pakistan and for its civilian structures. So there's a lot at stake at the moment.
Adrian Levy with us from London. He is a senior correspondent for The Guardian newspaper, co-author of the book Deception about Pakistan and its nuclear weapons program. Adrian, help us understand some of the players here. As I am reading the reports, there are two rival militant groups, which are Islamic-oriented, Ansar-ul-Islam and Lashkar E-Islam. These groups appear to be rivals in the Khyber area. They've been fighting with each other, and this makes it more complicated, as you just described, the Pakistan military and paramilitary attempting to subdue, if not pacify, this rural part of their country.
Yeah, I think in this region, the Khyber Pass region, which borders the great city of Peshawar and then runs up to Afghanistan, the area that historically the great game was played in back in the 19th century by the British with their failed attempts to subdue the area. I think what we're seeing here is both internecine fighting between these two militant groups and also each group attempting to secure more funding, arms and press gang. Local support into creating and strengthening and enlarging their militia. But the fact that these two groups also despise each other and have very real and deathly rivalries is something that's being exploited by the government and the Pakistan military mm-hmm. in a policy to drive a wedge between them. And we are beginning to see, however weak, initial military onslaughts against them, although they seem to be largely symbolic at the moment as the government feels its way. But there are other areas too where there are other kinds of militias. We have Baitullah Masud in Waziristan, who is a former gym instructor and now leader of the Pakistan Taliban, the man who the CIA accused of being behind the assassination of Benazir Bhutto,
right.
former Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
Although that evidence has yet to be disclosed or analysed by any independent parties, and Baitullah Masud himself has vigorously denied having anything to do with the killing. And Benazir Bhutto's old party, the Pakistan People's Party, or PPP, also suspects that he has perhaps only a tangential connection with the assassination attempt. But there were attempts to make peace accords with him, and they seem to have broken down, resulting in renewed fighting. He, his people seem to be responsible for the death of 22 peace negotiators sent up on behalf of the military and government to discuss a new round of talks. And so bleak news there, as well as in Swat, the Swat Valley, which is only about 100 miles north of Islamabad. And so incredibly close to the centre of politics in Pakistan. But just one thing to put some bright news on this otherwise sort of dour news agenda. The Pakistan newspapers, you know, if you look at them online, actually every single one of them is highlighting this day in, day out. They are editorialising about it. They are debating it. They are trying to give succour and support to the government to strengthen its hand. There's very few voices of doubt or support coming out through all of the press saying, hey, you know, these guys are the real face of Pakistan. Quite the contrary. People are fearing the encroachment of these forces and want to see a steadfast response against them. And I think that's something very important to bear in mind both for people in the UK and people in the US watching this. You know, these militias are not the face of Pakistan. They're a face feared by the majority of Pakistanis.
Well, and Adrian, I take your point, because what's crucial here is not that Musharraf survive, in my view, but that a secular Pakistan be able to survive the various Islamic forces that are operating inside its borders. And some deals have been cut with some of these groups that make it even more difficult for the U.S. to expect that the Pakistani government can regain control. We need to take a break. We'll return with Adrian Levy and talk more about the situation in Pakistan. If you have a question or comment, now's the time to call. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. Adrian Levy with us, the author of Deception, Pakistan, the United States, and the Secret Trade in Nuclear Weapons. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ah!
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Fritti di Mar Grill in Marina is a delicious haven for lovers of Italian seafood pasta and salads at neighborly prices. Owners Tito and Sonia Perez invite you to their new restaurant, Fritti di Mar Grill, for lunch or dinner weekdays and on Saturdays from 4 p.m. Every tasty meal comes with generous portions of Salvadoran warmth. Fritti di Mar Grill is at 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in friendly Marina. Browse to FrittiDiMarGrill.com or call 384-8525.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with Adrian Levy, a senior correspondent for the Guardian newspaper in England and the co-author of Deception, Pakistan, the United States, and the Secret Trade in Nuclear Weapons. It's out in hardcover, as far as I know. Has the soft cover come out yet, Adrian?
I think it's due out in October.
In October. Great. Well, it'll give more people a chance to get the great information that you offered there. And as I said, it really is the definitive story, in my view, not only of the AQ Khan network, but the history of American duplicity with its own people over what was really going on with the Pakistani government and our level of support for various things going on there. Adrian, I want to return to the dust-up between Afghanistan and Pakistan over the attempt on the life of Hamid Karzai back in April. He is the U.S. handpicked leader of Afghanistan, and he has repeatedly accused Pakistan of not going after the Taliban on the shared border there, and also of going soft on the hunt for Osama bin Laden. Who should we believe here?
Well, I think there's a certain amount of truth in what's being said there, but from the perspective of the Musharraf presidency, I mean, really, between the period of Musharraf's ascension in 1999 and then after 9/11 more significantly until 2006, I think it's absolutely right to say that while Musharraf very publicly preached support for the so-called war on terror and for cracking down on al-Qaeda and the hunt for bin Laden, he was doing precisely the opposite. And I think the agenda of the Pakistan military during that time was quite a different agenda. While we thought that they were supporting us, supporting NATO and allied troops in Afghanistan, elements of the military and the security establishment were absolutely positively attempting to destabilize the regime of Hamid Karzai. And the reason for it is simple. They see Karzai as too pro-Indian, too pro-Western, not sufficiently subservient towards Pakistan, and they see Afghanistan as a key strategic northern buffer for the country. And what the Musharraf clique wanted to see was a conservative Pashtun leader put in power after Karzai was felled. One that would be, as I said, subservient to the military in Rawalpindi and Islamabad. Now, things have changed slightly since the new civilian government had come into play and had taken up power in March of this year, but we're still left with a core within the Pakistan intelligence establishment and the Pakistan military who want to see the collapse of the Karzai administration. Now, that is not the message of the civilian government or its complex coalition, but that is undoubtedly the goals of a certain faction of the Pakistan military establishment. But we should counter this, just with a little bit of balance as well, by saying that Karzai himself does bleat too often, in the sense that he is the king of Kabul, and we should not forget that.
Mm-hmm.
His dominion goes about, you know, as things stand at the moment, about 1 mile outside Kabul, and even the very brand spankingly new paved metal road that goes from Kabul to Kandahar is not a safe place, not a safe highway for Karzai to drive on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that demonstrates the forces and hostility that are at play in Afghanistan at the moment. And it may not be as simple as his finger pointing to say that the ISI was behind this particular event.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just deboning what we do know from it, we also know that a large phalanx of Afghan security officials and police officers were complicit in the assassination attempts. Now, whether or not they were gathered together by the ISI, I don't think we'll ever find out.
Mm-hmm. Adrian, let me turn next to the power struggle between Nawaz Sharif. He was the prime minister who was toppled by Musharraf in that 99 coup. And he is in contention with the widower of Benazir Bhutto, who is Asif Ali Zardari. And they've been duking it out, particularly over the issues of the reinstatement of the Supreme Court, because Zardari fears that they may try to try him on corruption charges, that Chief Justice Chowdhury is not a real friend of Zardari's.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on here, and it's really, really bugged the Pakistani people. And, you know, once again, you know, if you look at the news or Dawn or, you know, the Post, any of the great Karachi, Islamabad, Rawalpindi, and Peshawar newspapers, you'll see time and time again, day in, day out, them railing against the infighting between Benazir Bhutto's old party and now Sharif's party. It's really getting people down. The goodwill period, the honeymoon that followed the election of this fraught coalition is beginning to ebb away, and people want the government to stop fighting and to start placing its energies in the fight against the jihadists who are encroaching on the great cities of Pakistan. But at the same time, there is a real difference of opinion here. Mm-hmm. Nawaz Sharif is mischief-making and trying to push his own agenda through,
yeah.
And the PPP have a real point. What they want to do is not simply reinstate...
I got to stop you there, Adrian. Sorry, we're out of time. Always a pleasure to talk with you. We'll do it again. Adrian Levy in London. On the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Walgreens, the pharmacy America has trusted since 1901. I'm Charles Osgood. Electric utilities will be able before long to get power at times of day when they need it most from solar energy stored in molten salt.
Molten salt is a metal that when you heat it up to about 1,000 degrees, it then retains the heat from the sun. And that then is used to heat water to make steam to drive a turbine, which makes electricity.
And without any emissions whatsoever. The story after this. Why fill your prescriptions at different pharmacies when you could get the convenience and peace of mind that comes with filling them all at Walgreens? Walgreens has thousands of pharmacies nationwide, and they're all connected, which means that you can pick up a refill at any one of them. Plus, they screen for interactions with prescriptions you've filled at any Walgreens, as well as anything else you tell them about. To take advantage of the great services like these, transfer your prescriptions to Walgreens. Show them your prescription bottles, and they'll take care of the rest.
Hey, I admit I'm competitive. How competitive? Let's just say I consider earning travel rewards a serious sport. Luckily, this summer I'll rack up 1,000 Choice Privileges bonus points with every stay at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn hotels. That means I can earn free nights faster. Just make sure to book at choicehotels.com to earn your bonus points. But you better hurry if you want to catch me. On your mark, get set, book at choicehotels.com.
Members earn bonus points with paying qualifying rates. Reservations must be made at choicehotels.com with arrival between 6-1 and 8-14-08. For details, visit choicehotels.com.
Hamilton Sunstrand, a subsidiary of United Technologies in Connecticut, has teamed up with a private equity firm called U.S. Renewables Group in Santa Monica to design thermal plants for power companies. Salt is cheap and abundant.
And it loses about 1% of the heat per day, so it's a very efficient means for storing heat.
Lee Bailey is managing director of U.S. Renewables Group.
By virtue of being able to store it, you'll be able to dispatch the power when the utility needs it.
The fact that molten salt can do this is not something that's just been discovered.
Molten metals and the storage of heat in metals has been known for, 40 or 50 years. What's new is that when oil was $20 a barrel, it was not cost-effective.
The thermal plant, able to give a utility extra heat it needs when the bulk of air conditioners, dishwashers, and washing machines are running, will be standard size.
In other words, a comparable size to a coal or a natural gas plant at a similar or competitive price with zero emissions.
That's the great thing. No fossil fuel burning, so...
There are no emissions. We don't use natural gas. We don't use oil. We just use a continuous supply of solar heat, and generally you're going to locate these in areas where the solar incidence is high.
Solar incidence is engineer talk for the sun being out to heat up the salt. So they're focusing right now on the Sun Belt in southern Europe. The Osgood File. This is Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
And my question of the moment, is Barack Obama giving progressives the shaft? John Shaft? Mike Lux is a progressive activist based in Washington, came to D.C. with the Clintons back in the early 90s, and he blogs at openleft.com. We're waiting to connect with him right now. But the question I want to put to Mike, because he has been conciliatory and helpful in bridging some of the gaps between Clinton and Obama supporters during the contentious and extended presidential primary on the Democratic side. And I want to get his thoughts, because he was there when Bill Clinton moved to the center after he won the Democratic nomination in 1992. And Clinton had a three-way race. He had Ross Perot worried about budget deficits, all those charts and graphs and his paid TV programs. You remember that? And he had a president with declining popularity, the first President Bush. And so I will argue that the climate was very different. But it is a pattern that candidates run to the base of their party, and then when they get the nomination, they run to the center. It's been going on in my lifetime back as far as Richard Nixon's presidency. And so for many progressives, the last 2 weeks have been difficult. Hillary Clinton, in my view, belatedly withdrew from the race and acknowledged that Obama will be the Democratic nominee. And shortly thereafter, Obama voted for the continuing funding. The Senate vote was 92-6 for the $162 billion for Iraq that takes us well into the next presidency. And then when it came to the FISA bill, we thought Barack Obama was strongly opposed to the grant of immunity, I call it amnesty, to the telephone companies that collaborated with the Bush administration on the illegal domestic surveillance. And he has since kind of redefined his position on that, saying, well, I wasn't so concerned about the immunity for the phone companies. My big issue was that I wanted to say that FISA is the only legal authority by which an administration can embark on eavesdropping on American citizens. That's one of the same arguments that's been advanced by Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And with all due respect and deference to Pelosi and Obama, I don't buy it. Because figure this, in approving this amended FISA law, and stating that it is the only way to wiretap Americans. And then later in the same law, it says, and by the way, the previous violations of FISA are going to be washed away. The lawbreaking of the Bush administration, we're just going to forget about that because, oh gosh, some terrorists might get us, or the threat of terror might derail the Democrats politically. And so as I look at this issue, I am with the progressive activists who have been getting on Obama's website and going to the My BO page, or My Bo, I don't know the right way to say that. And now as many as 10,000 people who are Obama supporters have sent a message on the Obama website saying, please, 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 take another look at the FISA bill, and in particular, the immunity for the phone companies. And I encourage you, if you're listening, go to BarackObama.com, find that My BO page, and look for the one that says, I'm trying to find the right language here, but immunity in the title, and add your voice. because this coming Monday, when the Senate and House resume business, we believe that the Senate, as one of its first tasks, will take up the FISA law. And I think that over the course of the next few days, we have an opportunity to be heard on this very important issue. Here's one comment from a supporter named Robert Arellano. I have watched your campaign with genuine enthusiasm, he wrote, and I have given you money. For the first time in my life, I have sensed the presence of a presidential candidate who might actually bring some meaningful change to the corrupt cesspool of national politics. But your about-face on the FISA bill genuinely angers and alarms me. Here's Marcos from the Daily Kos. I will continue to support Obama, but I was going to write him a check, and I decided I would rather put that money with Democrats who will uphold the Constitution. Greg Craig, Washington lawyer who used to be on the Clinton team, now is advising the Obama team. He went public at a critical point and offered his support to Obama. He said that Obama had decided to support the compromise FISA legislation only after concluding it was the best possible deal. This was a deliberative process and not something that was shooting from the hip, said Craig. Obviously, there was an element of what's possible here, but he concluded that with FISA expiring, that it was better to get a compromise than letting the law expire. Well, I think progressives have a lot to be concerned about here. And I also believe that in a cold, objective political analysis, that it's good politically for Barack Obama to reconsider his position, listen to his liberal progressive base, and find a way anyway. Keith Olbermann offered him a kind of fig leaf that we'll talk about in a moment on television just the other night. But I believe Obama needs to revisit this and needs to send a clear message to us, the Democratic left, that he has heard us, and that he understands. Now, what Olbermann has proposed is that if Obama can move the rules of the Senate and get the immunity provision separated from the rest of the bill, that he might be able to show some leadership here as the presumptive Democratic nominee, and at least allow a separate vote so that we would have a very clear record of which senators, Democrats and Republicans, decided to cave into the Bush administration and give them the immunity they seek. And this immunity is not just resentment on my part. It's not a desire to get even. I want the truth. Mark Klein is the San Francisco technician who used to work for AT&T. And after the New York Times went public about the NSA domestic wiretap program, Mark Klein went public. You can read about it at Wired.com, Wired Magazine's website. And he saved some of the information about the way they set up this intercept switch at the AT&T office in San Francisco, this one secret room where only NSA-cleared individuals could enter and work. And he's livid. He is outraged at the way the Democrats have caved in and given the Bush administration what they have sought in this area. And I really respect Mark Klein. He said this new FISA bill creates the infrastructure for a police state. He said the vote by Congress effectively gives retroactive immunity to the telecom companies and endorses an all-powerful president. It's a congressional coup against the Constitution. The Democratic leadership is touting the deal as a compromise, but in fact they have endorsed the infamous Nuremberg defense, just following orders. The judge can only check their paperwork. This cynical deal is a Democratic exercise in deceit and cowardice. And I think this is really one of the most critical issues of this campaign. And it hasn't been front and center for Barack Obama. We know that. But it's not too late for him to show leadership on this. And I encourage you to use all of your technology, your telephone, your email, and contact Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, and Barack Obama. And let them know this is the defining constitutional vote of this session. And that we as Americans, we know what's going on, we care about our constitutional rights, and we have not authorized our leaders to give them away. The other thing that I feel so strongly about is that the amnesty in this bill will prevent lawsuits from going forward, including one in which I'm a class action plaintiff. I don't want a dime from the government or from AT&T or any of the other phone companies. I want to know what they did, when they did it, who authorized it, and why. Little factoid. Quest Communications, Denver, was one of the few of the telecoms who said no thank you to the Bush administration. We didn't learn this until way later. But Quest received a request from the government, most likely the NSA, in late February or early March of 2001. And the request to Quest, and I'm not trying to make a pun there, was to tap into circuits that were not related to international telephone calls. They wanted to tap into what's called a switch to access local circuits in the Quest service area. Why? When Lamar Smith and those other Republican goons get up on the House floor and tell us, well, after 9/11, we had to find out who was calling Osama bin Laden. What a load of crap. This eavesdropping began before 9/11, and we don't know why. And we don't even know if our elected leaders know why. We don't know if they've asked. We don't know if they've been briefed. And the condescension and paternalism is clear. That the average American doesn't need to know about this because our big daddy government is there to keep us safe. Who cares about the Fourth Amendment? Who cares about your rights to privacy? Who cares about probable cause? Well, every one of these individuals took an oath. And they didn't take an oath to protect you or to protect me from Osama bin Laden. They took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And in this FISA cave-in, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Steny Hoyer, and Barack Obama are giving their approval to the law-breaking and to wiping the record clean. So I implore you, if you have a free moment, use that electronic device, your computer, your cell phone. Let your senators, this is before the Senate and will come up early in the week, let your senators know how you feel. And let Barack Obama know how you feel. I hope you'll do that for me. We're going to take a break here. It doesn't look like we're going to connect with Mike Lux today, but I'll be happy to connect with you in the next segment. Let me know what's on your mind. Lines are open toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And you can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. Of course, all of your communications are subject to intercept by the National Security Agency, courtesy of Cooperative Democrats. We'll be right back.
commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Want to save money, have fun, and walk a little lighter on the planet? Listen to Tomorrow Matters, talk radio for a better tomorrow, weekdays from 2 to 3 p.m. right here on KRXA 540 AM. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, as we bring in the experts to discuss how to cut energy costs, how to build community, and how to lower our ecological footprints. It's good for our pocketbooks, and it's good for the planet. And we have to, because tomorrow really does matter.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Agency blocked our access to his telephone line. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you, Peter? Sorry about the technical difficulties here.
That's all right. Well, listen, my question to you is in that song by the Four Men there, and is Barack Obama doing the Clinton? He won the nomination based on support from progressives with a lot of fairly progressive positions that he took. And now that he's got us locked in, he's supporting gun rights. He is criticizing the Supreme Court for blocking the death penalty for child rape convicts. And he's embracing a form of the faith-based initiative that President Bush brought us. And he's also surrounded himself by a new bevy of fairly conservative foreign policy advisors. Should we be concerned, or should we just hold our breath and say, this is what it takes to win?
Well, I think somewhere in the middle of the two. This is one of those deals that is, first of all, I think it's safe to say it's fairly inevitable. Pretty much every candidate of both parties, over a long period of time for many, many years, has perceived that they need to move to the middle to win the general election. And, you know, McCain is doing some things on that end as well. Bush certainly did that when he ran the first time, even though he was a hardcore right-winger on his politics. He moved to the middle, you know, with the compassionate conservative BS and, you know, all of those kinds of things to try to say he was more moderate.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of historical pattern. It's the conventional wisdom. I think, you know, my own view of it, and I've said this to my friends in the Obama campaign, is he's done, even if they feel like he has to do some of it, I think he's done too much of it. I think the thing that is so appealing about Barack Obama as a candidate and the thing that people have responded to is that he's going to be a different kind of politician, which means he's actually going to change things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you do too much of this, people start to worry about whether that's real or not. And so,
and Mike,
I don't think in response to your original question, I don't think we should be any more worried than we would be about any other politician.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna blow with the wind a little bit. But I do think they're you know, what they're doing is you know, a little over the top, and I wish they would not do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, Obama came out in favor, or actually opposed to the California ballot measure that would reinstate a ban on same-sex marriage, and I consider that progress and a tip of his hat to the left, so I'll take that.
Well, he's done a couple of other things, Peter, that I think are worth noting. I mean, for one thing, he said in a speech to Latino elected officials the other day that he very, very strongly reaffirmed stand in favor of universal health care and said that it would be one of his very top priorities as president, and he was very passionate about it. And he said, you know, you should hold me accountable if I don't get this done, because, you know, I'm going to get this done, and I want you to hold me accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when he's saying stuff like that, I think it's great. Another great sign that I was personally quite happy with is that, and I don't know if you saw this, Peter, because it didn't get that much attention, but he completely dissed the DLC the other day. They held their national conference in Chicago, in his hometown, on a day when he was scheduled to be there. And Obama still did not come to the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was actually pretty dramatic, you know, for him to be that open, you know, in his disdain of them. Was to me a pretty good signal. So it's not like he's entirely,
right,
you know, gone off the deep end.
I think
he's done it a little too much.
Yeah, I'm with you. I take your point. I'm not, you know, jumping off the bus, under a bus, or anything to do with a bus. but I do think that this is a moment when progressives should speak up. I believe that the FISA bill is the defining constitutional issue of this year, and I believe it would be an effective and positive political position for him to take, to champion our constitutional rights, to push back against a government incursion, and to expose the wrongdoing of the Bush administration. If he continues to support FISA, none of those will happen. And I support those who are going to the Obama website, to mybo.com, and adding their voices. More than 10,000 people in the last few days have asked him to reconsider this position. And I want to put as much behind that as we can, because I think this is a defining issue.
I agree with you, Peter, and I do think, I'm really glad you mentioned it, because that's something that we've highlighted, that project on his website is something we've highlighted on Open Left, you know, several times over the last week, and it's something that I support as well. I would also say this to you as a, you know, as a San Franciscan, you need to work on Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
because let me tell you something. When Nancy Pelosi agreed to cut that deal, it really sort of put Obama in a corner. Because, I mean, we can imagine the, you know, the rhetoric from John McCain and the Republicans. You know, Barack Obama is so liberal that he doesn't even agree to an intelligence bill that Nancy Pelosi agreed to. It really boxed him in a way, and I think put him in a very difficult position. Now, that doesn't excuse it. I still wish he had done what you said and stood up. But I really think that politically, when Pelosi did that, it put him in a very tough position.
Well, and I want to know the backstory. It may take a couple of years for it to come out, but as you know, Mike, back in February, the White House was screaming that the sky is falling. If we don't have a FISA bill, you know, life as we know it will come to an end. And somewhere in March or April, this deal was cut, and they stopped attacking the Democrats on this issue. And sometime we'll find out about that. Mike, thanks for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Mike Lux, L-U-X. He blogs at openleft.com. We'll talk again soon, Mike.
Thanks for having me on, Peter.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Grab a podcast. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
GM stock falls to a 54-year low.
Bankruptcy is not impossible for the automaker.
Hostages rescued from the Colombian jungle.
U.S. intelligence did provide at least some of the information used to locate the hideout.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. It used to be said that as General Motors goes, so goes the nation. Let's hope that's not true. GM is in deep trouble. Today, its stock fell below $10 for the first time since 1954. Dwight Eisenhower was president, and gasoline was 29 cents a gallon. If auto sales continue to fall, Merrill Lynch says bankruptcy for the nation's number one car company is not impossible. More from CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus.
General Motors is said to have to raise something like $15 billion to be able to sustain itself through the rest of the year. And, you know, years ago you would have never thought that GM would be in a predicament like this, but here we are with gas prices nearing $5 a gallon in many parts of the country, and many of GM's cars, indeed many of the American cars, just not moving off showroom floors.
The price of crude oil continues to rise. It jumped $2.60 today, settling at a new high, $143.57 a barrel.
There is increasing demand and decreasing spare capacity in the market, and oil buyers are increasingly nervous, and so they continue to bid the price up.
Robert Bryce of Energy Tribune magazine. President Bush, talking to reporters at the White House, said Americans should demand that the ban on offshore drilling be lifted.
We have got the opportunity to find more crude oil here at home in environmentally friendly ways, and they ought to be writing their Congress people about it.
Now this.
Fox Business, taking business news to the next level. A new approach, attitude, and edge. Experienced and straightforward. One team covers it best.
Trade trends.
Market moves.
Personal finance.
No charts, no jargon. Just smart and savvy insight. Money moves that make sense. End of story. Fox Business Network. A world of business. Start here, start now. To find Fox Business, check your local listings or log on to foxbusiness.com today.
This 4th of July, your local Sam's Club is bursting with ways to save. Bring forth the flavor at your patriotic party with a barbecue. From grilling essentials like fresh meats and produce to drinks in the grill itself, you'll find the items you need at prices worth celebrating. And if you're not a member, you can start your savings with a bang. Join as a new member on July 1st through 4th, and you'll receive a $10 gift card. Sam's Club, where membership means terrific values this 4th of July and every day.
Three American men, Colombian politician Ingrid Betancourt, and 11 other people are free this evening, rescued from a jungle camp where they were held by leftist rebels. CBS News correspondent David Martin reports the operation was conducted by the Colombian military.
As the Colombian military describes it, they captured the security guards for the hostages, and then the security guards convinced the people who were actually holding the hostages to free them, and there was no one hurt in the rescue.
U.S. intelligence played a role helping the Colombians locate the site where the hostages were held. Betancourt says the operation was absolutely impeccable. The three Americans, Mark Gonsalves, Thomas Howes, and Keith Stansell, were working in Colombia under contract to the Pentagon when they were captured 5 years ago. The Colombian government says they're now on their way home. It's a good time to be a vegetarian. CBS News correspondent Hari Srinivasan says the price of meat is rising because of the record price of corn.
Most of the meat that we eat in this country is corn-fed, whether it's cattle or chickens or hogs. So the price of corn increases the price of meat. And you'll see the price of, say, chicken and pork affected sooner than you will see the price of beef affected because the life cycles of those animals are so much shorter.
Corn prices have been pushed up by the demand from ethanol plants and by the Midwest floods that ruin crops. It takes nearly 4 pounds of corn to produce 1 pound of pork. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger returned to Big Sur today.
Now, I was just here last week getting a briefing here, and I thought that I would come back and the fire will be out. But that is not the case. I think that we have a very stubborn fire here.
Sparked by a lightning strike in the Los Padres National Forest, the blaze has blackened 82 square miles and destroyed 16 homes. Now the Pacific Coast resort town itself is threatened.
They think it's burning downhill towards Big Sur. It's been so smoky that they haven't been able to do the aerial reconnaissance or get hand crews in to figure out exactly where the fire is right now.
Emergency services spokesman Darby Marshall, most of the remaining residents of Big Sur have been ordered to evacuate. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Imagine all the possibilities for your next painting project. Now imagine saving up to 30% too. From July 2nd through the 7th, save at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams Paint Store. Save up to 30% on exceptional Sherwin-Williams paints, stains, wall coverings, and more. We're open July 4th, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., so hurry in and save for painting, decorating, and great savings. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Don't miss Lowe's July 4th event. Get 10% off major appliances priced at $397 or above, $5 off 1 gallon, or $20 off 5 gallon qualifying Valspar paint via mail-in rebate. Ask for 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more when you use your Lowe's consumer credit card, and get entire house carpet installation for just $99 when it's special order Stainmaster or Premier Living carpet and pad purchased from Lowe's. Lowe's, let's build something together. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only. Credit offer available from June 26th to July 7th.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you're listening. 6 minutes after the hour. Later this hour, Eric Bullard joins us from Media Matters for America. And we're going to talk about what Wes Clark actually said and how the soundbite has been used to make it sound like he meant something very different when he was talking on Face the Nation last Sunday about John McCain. And here we are in the middle of summer. A lot of people have blasted away for the lengthy 4th of July holiday and maybe tacked on some vacation time in front or behind of it. This Friday, we'll be taking the day off in honor of Independence Day. And on all of these great radio stations, you'll get the best of Peter B. Collins. After you hear it, let me know if you thought it was best, okay? For our listeners on KGOE in Eureka, next hour, about quarter past, we'll be interrupted for a baseball game. Don't be offended. And in this case, don't blame Karl Rove or the Republicans. It's not their fault. Well, as I mentioned, it's midsummer, and we're trying to track down another guest on the program, and Katrina's working feverishly on that. The guest is Esther Kaplan, an investigative editor at The Nation magazine, and she's written a powerful piece about some struggles inside the labor movement in the United States, particularly over representation of nurses. And we'll get her comments on that and share some of the facts with you in a few minutes, assuming we get a hold of her. But while I have a minute, I wanted to update you on another labor story that we covered recently. It was about 2 weeks ago. And this relates to one of those big three automakers spin-off companies. General Motors, somebody told me their stock dropped to a new low of $10 a share today, and that they are considering bankruptcy. But over the last few years, General Motors, in order to raise cash, has spun off part of GMAC, the finance division. And first they did Delphi, and then American Axle. Delphi is a parts company that did go into bankruptcy, I believe, about a year and a half ago, and they used that process to slash wages, cut workforce, and lean and mean the company. And as we reported again about 2 weeks ago, another spinoff is called American Axle. And as the name applies, they manufacture the axle assemblies that go into American-made cars. And as we reported to you at the time, the UAW appears to have operated against the interests of its members by negotiating a deal for American Axle that cut wages from $28 to $14.50 and as low as $10 an hour for new hires at their plant in Three Rivers, Michigan. And you say, well, if the UAW made concessions and givebacks of those dimensions, then this must have been a company on the brink of bankruptcy. Not so. Last year, American Axle made a profit of $37 million. And the top executives were given increases ranging from 44 to 200%. That's right. Their reward for cutting the wages of the workforce was some pretty big bonuses. Vice Chairman and Chief Technology Officer Yogendra Rahandgale, that's quite a name, wait a minute, Rahangdale, received $1.5 million. The son of the CEO, newly appointed president, got $1.27 million. And a vice president named Patrick Lancaster got $1 million and change. And under the terms of his compensation package, the CEO, Dauch, gets about $9,000 an hour. Compare that to the $10 an hour that new hires get, and what appears to be a top wage now of $14.50 at American Axle. And this comes at a time when we're all under incredible pressures economically. Cost of gas, the cost of bread, the cost of everything is going up. And workers in Michigan have been hammered so many times and in so many different ways over the last 10 years that they're basically in shock. So I wanted to update you on that. That's American Axle, and I want to thank Chris Bryan, a listener in the Salinas area, who brought that story to our attention. And he also shared my concern about the battle between SEIU, that's the Service Employees International Union, and the California Nurses Association, and a group called United Healthcare West, I think I have that right, which is headed by Sal Rosselli. And Sal is a longtime union guy who has been a supporter of his union chief, David Stern. And so that battle takes on incredible interest as well. So we're trying to reach Esther Kaplan at this time. I don't have an email. Sorry. Sure, yeah. Katrina needs to use my computer. She's trying to find Esther Kaplan. In the meantime, you can call this program toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And I want to thank Steve in Salinas, who called and gave us the toll-free number for the Obama campaign. And let's see if I can get through there right now and let him know how I feel about Barack Obama and FISA. You know how I feel.
For contacting Obama for America, please visit us on the web at www.barackobama.com. To speak to an Obama representative about voting, press 4.
Para continuar con un representante que hable español, oprima el número 7 ahora.
Please listen carefully to the following six options.
Because they've changed since you became the nominee.
To volunteer with the campaign, press 1. To contribute to the campaign, to report difficulty contributing online, or to report an error processing a previous contribution, press 2.
Nope.
To request assistance in ordering official campaign merchandise, or to ask about a past order, press 3.
No, I got my merch.
To speak to an Obama representative about voting, press 4.
Hmm.
For information about any of our online applications and tools, including my.barackobama.com and our campaign phone banking application, press 5. If you have any other questions, press 6.
Let's see what I'm pressing 6. I want to talk to a human being there at Barack Obama for President.
Thanks for calling Obama for America. How can I help you?
Hi, I got a human being. It's just what I was wishing for. What's your name?
Carol. What's your name?
Carol, I'm Peter B. Collins, and I, under the rule of law, I need to inform you that I'm calling you from my job, and I'm on the air on a radio program on the West Coast. So I wanted to find out if you can convey a message, Carol, to Senator Obama for us.
Well, I'm happy to do that.
Okay. I really implore him to stand firm on the FISA law.
Mm-hmm.
And I am asking that when the Senate reconvenes next week, that he take a leadership role in separating out the immunity language in the House bill for a separate vote in the Senate. And I'm one of those people who's been supporting Senator Obama for months now. And on my program, I've taken a lot of heat from the Clinton folks, and I've taken a lot of heat from other people. And this is a really critical issue, Carol, and this is a defining matter in this campaign. And I really ask Senator Obama to stand for the Constitution, to embrace my Fourth Amendment right to probable cause before a wiretap could be placed on my phone.
Peter, do me one favor.
Sure.
Say your last name again.
Yeah, Carol. It's Collins. C-O-L-L-I-N-S.
Okay. Got it. And tell me what station you're with.
Well, it's called the Peter B. Collins Show, and we're on a bunch of stations in California, Oregon, and the West.
Okay. All right. I will convey the message, and I appreciate the phone call.
Okay. Carol, can you just tell me what kind of calls you're getting, and are people raising this issue with you?
Peter, they raise a lot of issues with us. We have calls from all over the country on a whole variety of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say yours is not the first call we've had on FISA, and it won't be the last.
I'm glad to hear that, Carol. And tell me where you're located.
We're in Chicago.
Chicago? Yeah, what part?
We're downtown Chicago.
Great. Well, I used to work in the Loop myself over there.
It depends on how long has it been since you've worked here?
The statute of limitations did run. I had a few parking tickets, Carol, when I left Chicago, and fortunately that's all behind me.
Okay, I'm not going to report you then, but hey. I do want you to know that if you haven't been to Chicago lately, you haven't been to Chicago. There's a lot of good stuff happening here.
I was there last year. I have a brother in Oak Park.
Oh, well, then you know it well.
Yeah, I think Chicago's a great toddling town. So, Carol, thank you for taking my call today, and I'm sure you hear from a lot of different people, and some of them aren't really polite, but I just want you to know.
You've been very polite, Peter, and I appreciate it.
Well, and a lot of us feel passionately about this issue, and we're looking to Senator Obama for the leadership we need right now.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, Carol, thank you.
Bye.
If you want to call the Obama campaign and leave a message, dial 866-675-2008, 866-675-2008, and I pressed 6. That's what connected me to Carol. We'll take a break and return and see what happens next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with 2 hours of talk radio all about our daily challenges, our fears, changes, crisis, addictions. Over 1,700 of them, can you believe it? Using the 12 steps, the law of attraction, whatever it takes. Join me Saturday afternoons 3 to 5 with my guests, and we'll find solutions together. The Sheila Show, Saturday 3 to 5 on KRXA, brought to you by Benji's Princess Monterey Whale Watching Trips. Open daily on Old Fisherman's Wharf, Monterey.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
You're listening to the greatest talk radio station on the planet, KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Santa Clara County, Highway 152 eastbound at Dinosaur Point. We still have a crash on the right-hand shoulder. Looks like a van that blew a tire and ended up losing control. That van is now on its side over on the shoulder, so you are seeing a little bit of slowing through the area due to looky-loos. Tow truck still on the way out to the scene. In San Martin, San Martin Avenue, right before Highway 101, a car stuck on the narrow right shoulder there with two flat tires, just waiting on CHP and a tow truck to come pull them out. Also delays in Monterey County due to the Basin Complex fire. Highway 1 is closed to all traffic from Parrington Ridge Road to 1 mile south of Limekiln State Park, where the mandatory evacuation is in effect. Drivers are being told to take Highway 101 instead, so we are seeing extra congestion through that area as well. This report is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know a new study from Carfax shows that the number of salvaged cars for sale in the United States has more than doubled? Ask your used car dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 22 minutes after the hour. And joining me now is Esther Kaplan, investigative editor at the Nation Institute. She wrote a lengthy and, I think, powerful piece in the June 16th edition of The Nation called Labor's Growing Pains. Esther, thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to talk with you. It's in the middle of summer, and this is the show we're having today is one of those things where our best laid plans go sideways. So I'm sorry that you were sitting by the phone waiting for us to call the last 20 minutes, but it happens that way sometime.
Yeah, well, we've connected at last through the miracle of technology.
Well, I read your article several weeks ago, and I've been looking for someone who could put all this in perspective, because we have a complicated interlabor struggle going on. over the representation of nurses and other healthcare workers. And on the one hand, Andy Stern has ambitious plans for his union, the SEIU, Service Employees International. And the struggle takes on the California Nurses Association, led by Roseanne DeMauro here in the Northern California area, and also Sal Roselli, who is a former SEIU guy who is now in charge of, is it Catholic Health or United Healthcare West?
Right, which is actually a local within SEIU. So he's the internal dissident in this story.
Yeah, so he's kind of the rebel there. As we size this up, one of the things we've been talking about is the way the United Auto Workers has been undermining the interests of its members by cutting deals with employers. And that's one of the charges here, where Andy Stern, in trying to expand the total number of people covered by union contracts, appears to be undercutting the interests of nurses.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not only nurses, it's all kinds of workers, home care workers, nursing home workers, health care workers up and down the ladder. But yeah, SEIU has correctly diagnosed an enormous crisis facing organized labor in this country, which is it is almost impossible now to unionize workers through a traditional labor board election because the union busting business has become big business, $1 billion a year business, and almost no union elections happen anymore without a massive and in many cases illegal attempt to intimidate workers away from joining unions, including tens of thousands of illegal firings each year for which companies just get a slap on the wrist. There's really no motivation to obey labor law in this particular regard. So you have to go out, as many unions have concluded, and find a way to make that employer agree to be neutral, make that employer go in and allow you to just sign up a majority of workers on petitions or union cards, and for them to just accept that a union is in once a majority sign. But what SEIU has done, most unions like the Communications Workers of America has done with this famously with Singular, you just conduct a big corporate campaign against the company till they cry uncle, and then you move in and sign up the workers. They've gotten, you know, tens of thousands that way. SEIU's tried to use more of a carrot approach, which is, hey, we'll go to the state legislature, we'll lobby for this bill you want, and then in return, you let us organize at some of your places. Or if you let us organize, we'll ink a contract deal that gives up the right to strike, that commits that, you know, we and our members won't speak out publicly against your company.
Mm-hmm.
In some case, in, you know, probably the most notorious case, saying we'll fight for tort reform on your behalf.
Ouch.
So, creative would be the kind word for some of the elements in these deals, and they've been slowly becoming public over the last year, and the anger on the part of many workers is becoming more and more visible.
And Esther, let me just pick one example. Your article is rich, and I want people to read it. Go to thenation.com and search for it. But one of the ugliest healthcare companies is Tenet. And this dispute between SEIU National and Sal Roselli, in some respects, broke out over a deal with Tenet where SEIU had made a deal. What was that deal, and why did that offend so many hardcore union members?
Right. Well, Tenet is a national healthcare company, and this is, again, part of the challenge is a lot of the companies where unions are trying to organize now are national. They aren't the local companies, so you have to deal with national strategies. SEIU is very correct in that fashion. Tenet hospitals in California are unionized, but they have a ton of hospitals in Florida, for example, that are not, and in some other states. So SEIU and United Healthcare Workers West, Sal's local, went into bargaining in a coordinated way because part of the goal was win some gains for the California workers who are already in unions, and part of the goal was cut a deal so that you can unionize those other facilities in Florida and beyond. And the question is, what's the balance here between those two competing needs? What ended up happening is the elected negotiators, this is typical with unions where regular old union members get to be elected to be part of the bargaining committee, were left out in the hallway while the international leaders of SEIU went in to try to cut a deal. And, you know, they more or less gave away the farm in return for being able to organize more tenant facilities in other states, right to strike.
Mm-hmm.
They even agreed that tenant could contract out up to 12% of its workforce. So they're literally signing away on the outsourcing of jobs, which
right.
is, you know, gutting.
Esther, I'm going to have to stop here now, but could we make a deal to find a time next week when we could invite you back and discuss this at more length, because there's a lot to it.
Yeah, I'm sorry that
it's not your fault.
Connection happened.
We'll make it work and we'll talk again. Esther Kaplan from The Nation. More coming up here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Why did the American cross the street? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. To answer that, you have to go back to the oil shock of 1973, when gas prices went crazy from 38 cents to 55 cents. To ensure the Mideast could never again cut us off, President Nixon announced Project Independence to make us self-sufficient by 1980. We changed daylight saving time. We drove 55. We finished the Alaska pipeline. And yet, in 1981, oil spiked again when countries like Saudi Arabia decided to take control of their own oil supplies. Now, we could have taken the hint that our car culture was vulnerable, that it was time to do the hard stuff, like live closer to work, invent a really good rechargeable battery, invent a bus that absorbs body odor. But then, Saudi Arabia, which was worried we might do just that, opened the oil spigot, created a glut, and happy days were here again. Businesses blossomed, including Starbucks. For a while, the number of Starbucks was limited only by the supply of burgundy paint. In fact, when research found some people were unwilling to cross the street for their coffee, Starbucks built shops on both sides of it. Until this year, we find ourselves back in 1973 with the same crazy gas prices, except that this time, Saudi Arabia isn't going to pump more oil. And when the price of gas approaches the price of a decaf Sulawesi, well, it brings us to today's news that 600 Starbucks will be closing, including many of the shops that were right across the street from each other. And that is how decisions made or not made 35 years ago have us driving less, driving slower, and soon crossing the street. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and hackers invade your business every day through email, instant messaging, web browsing, and your company's website. With no software to install and no per-user license fees, Barracuda Network Firewalls are easy to set up and affordable. Do what 50,000 other companies have done. Reclaim your network with a Barracuda Network Firewall. For a free evaluation unit, call Barracuda Networks, 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark LaCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale and am currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark LaCluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
Socolo Restaurant in Pacific Grove is the place to go when you're looking for ultra-authentic Mexican food. From our handmade tortillas to our delicious Angus skirt steak, Socolo does it right. You won't find canned tomatoes, frozen meat, or pre-made items at Socolo. Everything is made here. We proudly use only Angus beef. Some of our specialty items include pozole, chicken mole, handmade sopes, and the only handmade flour tortilla on the peninsula. We feature seafood items like wild salmon, ceviche, and numerous shrimp and fish dishes. If you're looking for fresh and authentic Mexican food, Socolo is the place to go. Socolo is located at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number is 373-7911. Catering and food to go is also available. Socolo Restaurant at 162 Fountain Avenue, Pacific Grove is the place to go for quality, authentic Mexican food. Call 373-7911 for takeout or reservations. Socolo will also be opening soon in downtown Salinas. Look for us.
Live from the Left Coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. You get ready for that long holiday weekend break. As we mentioned, Friday we'll take the day off. Best of Peter B. Collins on Independence Day. Back live with you per usual on Monday. And for our listeners in San Francisco on Green 960, I'll be sitting in for Peter Laufer Sunday morning, 9 to 11 a.m. live and local on Green 960. Check it out if you can. It'll be streamed at green960.com.
Somebody I never met, but in a way I know.
Eric Bollard joins us today from Media Matters for America. Their website is where you go to find the truth that doesn't show up in the mainstream media. It's mediamatters.org. Eric, how you doing?
Good, Peter, and you?
Not too bad. I'm doing a little better than Wesley Clark. I didn't get soundbite sliced this week. And I want to commend your colleague, Paul Waldman, who wrote an excellent piece that you can find still on the homepage at HuffingtonPost.com. Entitled General Clark and that POW thing McCain hates talking about.
Right, right.
And he did a great job of, first of all, taking apart what actually happened on Face the Nation, and I want to go over that with you in a second, and then talked about the context here, that John McCain has been using his status as a POW and war hero for years to drive his political fortunes.
Yeah, basically his entire political career back to his 82, I think was his first campaign in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's fascinating also is obviously there's a lot of swift boat talk in the air. You know, Republicans cried foul and they said Wes Clark was swift boating John McCain when nothing could be further from the truth. But it's interesting, if you go back to 204, one of the really craven media narratives that the press adopted was that whole charade, that controversy, was John Kerry's fault, not only because he responded too slowly, because he talked about his bio so much. He talked about his years in the Vietnam War. He talked about it so often that, of course, that invited scrutiny. And, of course, people were going to question it.
Hmm.
Of course, Bob Dole ran for president in 96, talked about his military record. No one ever suggested that meant open season for sort of loony birds to question his service. But John McCain, as Paul Waldman pointed out in his column, he's been talking about his Vietnam years for decades. And when someone like Wesley Clark, you know, questions whether that translates into executive decision-making, you know, smarts, suddenly the press doesn't think because McCain's been talking about his war years that, of course, people are going to talk about it. The press does the exact opposite. How can anyone even dare talk about John McCain's war years? So the double standard was amazing. With McCain, with Kerry, because he talked about Vietnam, of course people were going to criticize his service. John McCain talks about Vietnam. And of course, you're not allowed to even talk about his service.
You bet. Political correctness from the
really
right
is.
Does not permit us to have an honest conversation. And, you know, we see Obama doing it. We see, in fact, Wes Clark did it. You have to, when you talk about John McCain, and if you're going to lower the boom on him in any fair way, shape, or form, you have to first genuflect before his military service.
That's why Bob Schieffer's reaction on Face the Nation when Wesley Clark was on was so telling. I mean, Bob Schieffer looked and sounded like Wes Clark had just suggested that, you know, John McCain was a mass murderer.
But let me...
I mean, he was in total shock that Wes Clark suggested that being shot down in a fighter plane did not make you qualified to be president.
Well, wait a minute, though, Eric. Those are words that Bob Schieffer loaded into Wes Clark's mouth.
Right.
And his media training did not kick in to prevent him from repeating it. But we get ahead of it.
I think Wes Clark was so calm and rational during his entire conversation that I don't think he ever imagined that he had sparked any sort of controversy. But Schieffer says, being shut down.
All right, but let me recap the sequence here, because important to note that first Wes Clark, bowed in the direction of John McCain.
Yeah,
I certainly honor his service as a prisoner of war. He was a hero to me and to hundreds of thousands and millions of others in the armed forces as a prisoner of war. He has been a voice on the Senate Armed Services Committee, and he has traveled all over the world. But he hasn't held executive responsibility. That large squadron in air in the Navy that he commanded, it wasn't a wartime squadron. He hasn't been there and ordered the bombs to fall. He hasn't seen what it's like when diplomats come in and say, I don't know whether we're going to be able to get this point through or not. Do you want to take the risk? What about your reputation? How do we handle it publicly? He hasn't made those calls, Bob. And then Bob says, well, I have to say, Barack Obama has not had any of those experiences either, nor has he ridden in a fighter plane and gotten shot down. I mean, and then he's cut off as Clark says, well, and he's repeating what Schieffer just fed him, I don't think riding in a fighter plane and getting shot down is a qualification to be president.
Right.
Now, that very last part is what has been excerpted and is passing as the soundbite of the week,
right,
Eric.
And even that last part has been sort of enlarged and blown up, amplified to mean Wesley Clark was attacking John McCain's patriotism. He was trashing his war record, questioned his time as a POW. These were all media translations to the point that Wes Clark made about executive decision-making, that being shot down in planes does not qualify you to be president. Wes Clark has made similar comments along the notion of, foreign policy vis-a-vis being a veteran. And he's made that point several times before. But the McCain camp, which I think, frankly, was triggered by Bob Schieffer's reaction, I think they responded to Bob Schieffer. Bob Schieffer almost fell off his chair, suggesting, when Wesley Clark made these rather innocuous statements that he's made before. I think Schieffer's exaggerated response triggered the McCain camp to realize that this had hit a nerve with the village, with the Beltway press, and that the Beltway press was willing and as we saw, able, was going to rush to McCain's defense and trash Wes Clark, and that's exactly what happened.
And Waldman captures them here in this column. CNN's Rick Sanchez described it with an incredulous expression as dissing, some might say swift-boating, John McCain's military record.
Right.
Rick Klein on ABC accused Clark of calling into question, in surprisingly sharp language, Senator John McCain's military record. Wall Street Journal, Gerald Seib and Sarah Murray were aghast. Quote, the one certainty of the 08 campaign, it might have seemed, was that Senator John McCain would be acknowledged all around as a war hero for his service in Vietnam. But apparently not. Now, all of that, as you say, is a translation.
Total fabrication.
Of what occurred.
Right.
And there's a lot lost in that translation, or gained. They're adding their own interpretation and emphasis.
Oh, yeah. They're adding things that Wesley Clark never said, which, if you're a journalist and you're in the business of who, what, where, when, and why, is puzzling, because where does amplify, where does inflate, where does exaggerate, I'm not familiar with those tenets of journalism,
mm-hmm.
but that's exactly what they did. A, I don't think they watched the clip, and B, they were just being fed this from the McCain conference call.
Well, and, Eric, I watch a fair amount of TV. I haven't been to Fox lately. I'll just confess that. But it was on the PBS NewsHour that we actually heard Bob Schieffer's question before Wes Clark's answer. In every other episode, I saw this clip replayed.
Oh, sure, right.
It was isolated to Clark's response.
Yeah, they always chop it down to 4 seconds or whatever. So context is out the window. But even, okay, we don't see the context. We don't see that Wes Clark is taking those words from Bob Schieffer. You know, this network news, et cetera, it's a fast-paced game. I understand that. But really, particularly the print journalism, which the ones you just recited that Paul noted, I mean, where does that come from? That's just fabrication is what it is. And it really did highlight how the press really is very anxious to rush to John McCain's defense when there's any perceived attack, and certainly anything that has to do with his war record. Again, if we go back to John Kerry in 2004, boy, I didn't see anyone throwing their bodies in front of John Kerry, you know, in the Swift boat.
Well, and Eric Bullard,
came along.
Your colleague, the other Eric, Eric Alterman at Media Matters, wrote a powerful, lengthy cover story for The Nation. I just finished it yesterday. And this, of course, went to press before Wesley Clark's comment last Sunday. But Alterman did a great job of identifying, as Paul Waldman and David Brock have in The Real McCain. Free Ride is their book. There's so many McCain books, I mix them up sometimes. At any rate, Alterman did a great job of laying out the way that McCain has misspoken and misstepped just in recent weeks, and the way the media has rushed to either cover it, correct it, or apologize for it.
Yeah, they are sort of you know, you get this mental picture of them trailing behind McCain with sort of a shovel and a bucket.
Yeah,
and that's sort of their job, I think. I think part of that is just a fear that this campaign is just going to be over by August. And frankly, you know, they saw what it did for business when there's a close campaign during the primaries. I think there's a little bit of let's try to keep this close. And the other part is, as David and Paul have pointed out in their book, this is nothing new. I mean, this is the press sort of de facto approach to John McCain. He doesn't flip-flop like John Kerry did. He doesn't flip-flop like Democrats do. He doesn't do anything Democrats do. He's sort of his own separate brand, and he has to be treated with sort of these unique kid gloves. And I'm sure that's what Eric detailed in his piece. And that, again, a lot of the mistakes and sort of gaffes that McCain has made in the last, you know, since the end of his primary season, I think with a Democrat, a lot of those would have been almost game-changing events.
Yeah.
I mean, Newsweek just did a piece about how he hasn't paid his taxes in 4 years. His wife hasn't paid taxes on her condo for 4 years out in San Diego. That's a pretty big deal if you're running for president and you don't even know that you owe 4 years of back taxes on property. I mean, that's just sort of campaign 101. I saw almost no follow-up coverage to that story.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I've heard it referred to on radio talk shows, and Katrina and I were talking about it at lunch because I haven't seen an original source for that. So I guess it was in Newsweek, but I haven't seen it replicated in other publications.
Yeah, no, this stuff just sort of settles to the bottom of the ocean really quickly.
Yeah. Now, Eric, one of the things that this points up in the way that Wesley Clark was entrapped in the soundbite process is the incredible discipline even of a guy who's not a good speaker like George W. Bush. Because when he goes into a press conference or any one of these places where he's ad-libbing, he is relentless in staying on message and saying the same thing over and over again.
Right.
When he's asked a question he doesn't know, like Indians being sovereign, he just repeats the word sovereign over and over again.
Right.
But Scott McClellan really kind of demonstrated this as he resurfaced, because the thing that these guys have really mastered is understanding how the media edits things out, takes away the context, and the only way to survive that is with a kind of ruthless discipline where you only say the same thing over and over again, and then they've got to edit that.
Right, they have no choice but to put in what you want. You know, part of that is just sort of the different DNA, I think, with Republicans and Democrats. Democrats, I think when they deal with the press, actually want to try to have an intelligent conversation, someone like Wesley Clark, and want to actually answer questions and engage. I'm not saying that the Democrats don't, you know, cling to talking points or spin. They do. But just in general, I think just intellectually, I think they see the press as something that should be engaged in, whereas McClellan points out, you know, I don't think the Bush White House ever did that. And so, no, of course they had no reason to really answer questions. It is just sort of this brutal repetition of sound bites that they want to repeat and repeat. And then, as you say, when editors go over it, they don't have any choice because it's just the same yep. thing over and over. And voila, that's what gets on the air.
If you don't give it to them, they can't use it.
Right.
We're going to take a break and return with Eric Bollert from MediaMatters.org. And we'll talk about a college buddy of mine who now works for the New York Times and had his picture badly retouched by the fine folks in the graphics department at Fox News. That's coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Traffic on KRXA. Monterey County fire still burning. Long delays south of Big Sur due to the Basin Complex fire. Highway 1's closed for a 31-mile section right now between the Point Sur Naval Facility, about 7 miles north of Big Sur, and the town of Lucia. Alternate routes, of course, is Highway 101. You can take that to West 68 if you're headed southbound, or Highway 101 to West 46 if you're headed up northbound, and take either of those back onto Highway 1. We are seeing heavy crowding, though, on 68 and 46, as well as Highway 101, as drivers are headed out there using that as an alternate, so do expect more delays than normal. Santa Cruz Road Construction has Emmeline Avenue undercrossing closed as it passes under Highway 1 from Fernside Street to Lee Street. They've got concrete finishing work happening out there, probably for another half hour or so. They're supposed to have it picked up just after 5 p.m. This report is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know if the airbags in that used car you're buying work? Step one to finding out. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. That's traffic on KRXA.
Go ahead. Take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system, your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there, and who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hambley, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
And you guys really pay close attention. I have to give somebody credit who watches Fox News so very carefully. And let's state, just to be fair, Eric, that Roger Ailes and the gang over there at Fox News, for a bunch of old conservatives, are pretty impressive when it comes to having flashy, zippy graphics and the whooshes and all the production values that they add.
On steroids.
It's a very high-impact presentation. And I was in Detroit recently, and aging Uncle Charlie was sitting there, and we were talking Democratic politics. And the whole time, the Fox News channel was on. And finally, after lunch, I said, "Charlie, what the hell are you doing?" And he said, "Oh, my wife likes it because it's so flashy."
I think every household with people over 70 by law has to have Fox News on in the background all day.
Well, these are people on their way to 90, so I guess that fits the demographic. But what's also interesting is you folks, and I think it was also Robert Greenwald, did some capture of Fox graphics, the B-roll. And they use a lot of very sexually suggestive, and sometimes they use nude photos where they pixelate the bits.
Mostly on Neil Cavuto's business show, of all things.
Yeah. So they make heavy use of graphics, DNA, photographs, and imagery. And so what surfaced is that a guy I went to Northwestern with named Stephen Redcliffe, who was the publisher of TV Guide, and now he is an editor at the New York Times, he got attacked on the Fox News channel, apparently for, I guess, being critical of Fox when he ran TV Guide. But they hammered him, and then they used a still photo of him that is clearly doctored. And you've got them side by side here on the Media Matters website. And since this isn't television, I want people to go there and take a look for yourself. But Steve Redcliffe looks about 20 years older. He's got huge bags under his eyes. His forehead, and I've got the bigger forehead of the two of us, his has expanded by about 3 inches. And they also appeared to have yellowed up his teeth.
Yes.
Now, why would Fox go to so much effort to doctor up a picture of somebody nobody knows?
Oh, I know. Isn't it great? Well, actually, the attack came because, and this is great, because it shows how thin-skinned Fox News is. And when you talk about their ratings troubles, they pretend they don't care. But, boy, they can't sleep at night when you do. A couple, 10 days ago, I think, maybe 2 weeks ago, the Times, Redcliffe was the editor, and Jacques Steinberg was the reporter. And they did a piece on Fox News, which did rebound in the second quarter and was in first place after CNN was first place in the first quarter, first time since 9/11 CNN had done that.
Mm-hmm.
So Fox had rebounded, but the New York Times took a bigger look and showed that its growth had basically plateaued during the campaigns. MSNBC and CNN had dramatic growth. Their audience is aging, et cetera. Just really going by the numbers. But 2 weeks later, they're still stewing over there. And so in their morning show, they did this segment on the editor and the writer, and they called them attack dogs, and they claimed Redcliffe had it out for Murdoch because Redcliffe, as you mentioned, used to work at TV Guide, which Murdoch owned, and then he got let go or whatever, so he has this axe to grind. And so this one story is a culmination, apparently this one news story about Fox ratings is a culmination of a year's worth of anger or whatever. But then the amazing part, hey, it's amazing that a national news organization would take time from this morning news program to do this sort of internal baseball nonsense.
Yeah.
And it just shows how thin skin they are. But then they doctored these photos of the New York Times reporter and editor, and as you said, turn them into sort of these, Dracula like figures.
Well, and with Jacques Steinberg,
like, what is going on? What's wrong with these people?
Steinberg, they used a kind of what are those funny mirrors that you used to find, you know, at a cheap amusement park?
Right.
Because Jacques Steinberg, his nose is enlarged by about 30%.
Right, and he's got yellow teeth, and his hairline is down, so it's almost in his eyebrows.
Yeah,
and it's just like it's juvenile beyond belief. And this is supposed to be, you know, the country's most watched news program. It's just hysterical. And I don't know the backstory yet. I was going to email someone at Media Matters how one of our people possibly found this
Yeah, they
but
deserve.
It's genius because it just points out now everyone is laughing at Fox News, as they should always be laughing at Fox News. And, you know, they're going to have to do, you know, I think New York Times came out with a statement. You know, Fox News is probably going to have to apologize tomorrow morning. So this is all part of the unraveling that we're watching.
Yeah, very interesting. And when you do find the Media Matters person, make sure they get extra mental health bonuses or something like that.
Yeah.
And I got 1 minute left, Eric. What else happened in the media this week that caught your attention and deserves a mention?
Well, there's this New York Times Magazine cover piece this weekend on Rush Limbaugh, and is probably one of the softest, most sleepy features I've ever seen. I mean, reading this piece, you would never know Rush Limbaugh is a controversial figure and has said radical, hateful things for years. In this profile, he's just a nice guy, and he's got a great life, and he's pretty much running the Republican Party, according to this article. It's really just amazing the whitewash the press does mm-hmm. on Rush Limbaugh and has for years.
Brought to us by OxyContin? Or by a rehab center near you.
That's right.
All right, Eric. Well, thank you very much. Have a great holiday weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Peter. Bye-bye.
Eric Bullard at MediaMatters.org. Coming up next, your calls in the Free Speech Zone. And next hour, we'll also talk to Robert Dreyfus from The Nation. He's got a new article about Barack Obama's foreign policy. My thanks to our producer, Katrina Rill, and our new assistant producer, Joshua Emerson Smith. Grab a podcast of this hour of the show at peterbcollins.com.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Ling. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader. From Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor, you name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Slumping sales have hurt the auto industry, and GM seems to be hurting most of all.
For the next couple of years, it's going to be ugly financially for General Motors, no matter what they do.
Peter Brown of Automotive News Magazine. CBS News economics correspondent Anthony Mason has more.
We are suddenly in the slowest auto sales market in this country in 15 years. So far this year, GM's auto sales are down nearly 10%. Truck sales are down more than 20%. At the same time, costs of glass, steel, plastic have all gone up, so the cost of making cars is rising. Merrill Lynch said today it expects GM will need to raise $15 billion to get by, and went so far as to say, and these are Merrill's words, bankruptcy is not impossible if the market continues to deteriorate.
The price of crude oil jumped again today, settling in New York at a record $143.57 a barrel. President Bush renewed his push for expanded domestic drilling.
While declaring that nobody likes high gasoline prices, President Bush said the U.S. could be drilling for more domestic oil if only Congress would allow it.
The Congress, the democratically controlled Congress now, has refused to budge.
In response to questions in the Rose Garden, President Bush urged Americans to write their members of Congress and urged them to authorize new drilling offshore and in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. He insists more oil can be obtained in environmentally friendly ways. Mark Knoller, CBS News, The White House.
In Colombia,
en una operación especial de inteligencia,
the head of the armed forces announces the rescue of Colombian politician Ingrid Betancourt and 14 other hostages, including three Americans. The leftist rebels holding the hostages in a remote jungle hideout were tricked into giving them up. They were flown out in unmarked helicopters. The Americans, Mark Gonzalez, Thomas Howes, and Keith Stansell, are being flown to the United States now. They were working under contract to the Pentagon when they were captured in 2003. The body of 12-year-old Brooke Bennett was found this afternoon in Randolph, Vermont, not far from the home of her uncle, Mark Jacks. She was with Jacks when she was last seen alive a week ago at a convenience store. State police say Jacks will be charged with kidnapping. Allegedly, he planned to force Brooke into a child sex ring on the day she disappeared. The California coastal town of Big Sur has been evacuated. Governor Schwarzenegger says it's threatened by a huge wildfire.
440,000 acres have burned. 60 structures have been destroyed.
Evacuees packed Highway 1 heading north. One official says the fire is just a big raging animal. Kroger supermarkets have expanded a ground beef recall that started with stores in Michigan and parts of Ohio. Now, Kroger says its stores in more than 20 states may have gotten meat contaminated with E. coli bacteria. Early last month, some people got sick. The Dow lost 166 points today, the Nasdaq down 53. This is CBS News.
Get the good stuff! At Napa Auto Parts, we know you want to keep your engine looking just as good as it runs. That's why we've got the world's number one selling engine degreaser for only $1.99 a can. Stop in today for Gunk Engine Bright or Gunk Foamy Engine Bright and remove tough grease and grime from practically any engine. They're just $1.99 each, and you can save even more with a $1 mail-in rebate. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
Don't miss Lowe's July 4th event. Get 10% off major appliances priced at $397 or above, $5 off 1 gallon, or $20 off 5 gallon qualifying Valspar paint via mail-in rebate. Ask for 12 months special financing on purchases of $299 or more when you use your Lowe's consumer credit card, and get entire house carpet installation for just $99 when it's special order Stainmaster or Premier Living carpet and pad purchased from Lowe's. Lowe's, let's build something together. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only. Credit offer available from June 26th to July 7th.
Military recruits with criminal records have to get waivers before they can put on a uniform. Now, as CBS News correspondent John Harchie reports, the rules have changed.
The Pentagon, straining to sign up enough volunteers after years of war, is writing new rules for what potential recruits would need a waiver based on past bad behavior to get in. Deputy Defense Undersecretary Bill Carr says they're not relaxing standards, just creating uniform definitions among all services.
We can track it and see what effect it has on attrition and performance.
The military will track whether, for example, a recruit who smoked marijuana once in the past is still likely to have a productive military career compared to, say, one who had repeated traffic tickets. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
Discovering their home in Ocala, Florida had been burglarized, Fred and Betty McKeeters walked around the neighborhood to see if anyone had information. They found their dresser at a yard sale. Police arrested the young man holding the sale. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Fox Business, taking business news to the next level. A new approach, attitude, and edge. Experienced and straightforward. One team covers it best.
Trade trends,
market moves,
personal finance.
No charts, no jargon, just smart and savvy insight. Money moves that make sense. End of story. Fox Business Network, a world of business. Start here, start now. To find Fox Business, check your local listings or log on to foxbusiness.com today.
This 4th of July, your local Sam's Club is bursting with ways to save. Bring forth the flavor at your patriotic party with a barbecue. From grilling essentials like fresh meats and produce to drinks in the grill itself, you'll find the items you need at prices worth celebrating. And if you're not a member, you can start your savings with a bang. Join as a new member on July 1st through 4th, and you'll receive a $10 gift card. Sam's Club, where membership means terrific values this 4th of July and every day.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
The Peter B. Collins Show, absolutely live in vivo. And this is the free speech zone where we take your calls at 888-5-PETER-B.
La reina de la noche, la diosa del vudú. Yo no podré salvarme, podrás salvarte tú. La tela de la araña, la uña del dragón.
La vida loca en español. Go ahead, Ricky. Blast away. If you're listening on KGOE in Eureka, you got about 8 minutes in the free speech zone unless you convert over to our online stream via peterbcollins.com. There's a baseball game scheduled. I think it's the Crabs, and it's coming up about 5:15. So, Eureka, get on the line now. Let me know what's on your mind at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We started the show with British journalist Adrian Levy talking about Pakistan. Things are really unraveling there, and it doesn't seem that what could happen could be in the interests of the United States, particularly as Afghanistan becomes very much squared off against Pakistan. They're supposed to be two allies of ours, but the tensions are obvious. Mike Lux talked about Barack Obama's move to the center, and that while there's been a lot of it, that some of it has to be expected, and yet at the same time, I encourage people to push back on FISA. I'll give you another link on that in just a minute. We talked with Esther Kaplan about the struggle that labor unions have over representing healthcare workers, and you got the Nurses Union and SEIU and Healthcare West all kind of taking different approaches. And we also talked with Eric Bullard of Media Matters about what Wes Clark really said and how the media has butchered that over the past few days, and that bizarre case of Fox News Channel retouching my college buddy Steve Redicliffe's photo to make him look really bad. That's what they did. So all that up for grabs, or you can introduce a topic of your own. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. If you've never called the program, here's your chance. It's summertime. A lot of people are on vacation or on different schedules. So if you call in right now, it'll be a short wait on hold, and we'll get to your comment directly. 888-573-8372. Well, the other night on the News Hour, I just wanted to point out a couple of moments. Colonel Douglas McGregor, retired Army colonel, came on, and he was on opposite General Barry McCaffrey. And I have never trusted Barry McCaffrey. He always has seemed to be a politically motivated military opportunist. And, of course, he ran the White House office on drug control, and I think that's just a total waste and a sham. But it was interesting because the discussion was about the recently published initial history of the military invasion of Iraq. And these two guys were talking, and McGregor is somebody we are trying to track down to invite on our program in the near future. Because he told the truth. He said, yeah, this report's accurate, but there's a lot more to the story. Like, you know, the way Paul Bremer arrived and disbanded the army and created a whole class of insurgents with an axe to grind against the United States, which had not existed just a week before. And so McGregor earned my respect. And McCaffrey, once again, was spinning, dissembling, and really not telling the truth. And he tried to paint this rosy story that we're drawn down to just 15 brigades now. Well, the truth is we have more troops in Iraq by about 10,000 than we did before Bush's so-called surge. And then he predicted without offering any path from here to there that, oh, yeah, you know, we'll be down to 10 brigades by 2009. And, you know, that's a sustainable force. Well, excuse me, General. I don't think you're dealing with the facts. And to try to paint the picture that we're actively withdrawing forces and have a net reduction in our boots on the ground in Iraq is simply not true. And, of course, on the News Hour, they're just too damn polite to call somebody on it when they lie. And true to form, it didn't happen there. I want to direct you to the website crooksandliars.com. where they have a great piece that's posted pretty close to the top of the thread about Barack Obama and telecom immunity, the FISA law. And they have a direct link to this page at barackobama.com. And I'm going to read you the URL. It's a little bit long, but I want you to be able to access this for yourself. You can either go to the link at Crooks and Liars, that's the easy way out, or jot this down. barackobama.com/page/group/SenatorObama-please-vote-against-FISA. Now, in that last string, the only punctuation there is the dash between Obama and please. Everything else is just one word. So I'm going to repeat that. my.barackobama.com/page/group/SenatorObama-please-vote-against-FISA. Now, I implore you to take a moment to go to this website and add your voice. We're going to find out if Barack Obama is a responsive political leader. And if he listens to the people who brought him to where he is today. And I want to encourage you to put up a note. Here's Michelle, posted it just a few minutes ago. Senator Obama, I'm writing to encourage you to stand up and fight against the current FISA legislation as you had originally, dot, dot, dot. Here's Matt's blog. I was glad to contribute to Senator Obama's campaign and vote for him during the primary, and I was looking forward to. So you get the idea. And I encourage you to post there and express yourself on what I think is the most critical issue that is not being addressed in the campaign. The media has not forced John McCain to take a position on this. They just assume that the war hero knows best, and why complicate it with asking him a question like that? So, as you know, I care passionately about this. I don't have great expectations, but I'm willing to put my effort and ask you to put your effort into changing the position of Senator Obama. And if we do, I believe that we will all benefit and we will see that this is a different kind of candidate. And if he doesn't change, we'll know that, well, I guess he's not that different. For our listeners at KGOE in Eureka, we're going to break away so you can hear a baseball game. I'll be back at you tomorrow with a live program, Best of Peter B. Collins, on Friday. You can stay with us if you've got your computer or BlackBerry. Log on to peterbcollins.com and follow the links to the live stream. All right. Took care of that. Dave in Eureka, thanks for calling.
Hey, Peter, I guess I'm one of the people that's just losing you on KGOE.
Yes, the program just went over a cliff there. Did you feel it?
Yeah. And I'm certainly not one of the first-time callers, but I so much appreciate that we have an alternative voice, a chance to dabble in reality, because so much of our media is now neocon-controlled. We are no longer supposed to be able to balance it out and hear what we're really up against, and I so appreciate you allow us that. We have to allow place, I guess, for baseball now and then, but we desperately need to be able to have a forum where we can question the accuracy of what's coming at us from so many Limbaugh-type bandages.
Well, Dave, I'm glad I can provide that, and it certainly is good for me. This daily exercise is what keeps me from going bonkers.
And you help us to stay a little bit more on the track, too. Stay with it, my dear friend. And how did you get away with it? How did the neocons not run you under their bus?
I don't know. When the white van came, I just wasn't intimidated. Thank you, Dave.
You're a good man.
I appreciate your good words. All right, Billy's down in the Central Coast area listening on KRXA 540. How are you, Billy?
I'm fine. And yourself, my friend?
Pretty good.
I'm troubled.
Yeah?
Yeah, besides the FISA thing, of course, you know, my thing is religion is what's wrong with the world. And
mm-hmm.
So what's this noises he's making about the faith-based initiative again? What's going on?
Well, Billy, I did not hear the candidate's speech about this. I've seen news accounts, and I have read a couple of articles about it. And what I'm hearing is that this is a kind of interesting move on his part. Yes.
he is reaching out to people of faith. And he is trying to accentuate his own faith as a matter of political gain. And
well, I, know he's kinda like,
I personally,
remind everybody, he's not a Muslim. I get that.
Right. And I, like you, am not totally comfortable with all of this. But I find this easier to take than, say, his criticism of the court on the death penalty case out of Louisiana or his support of the court's decision on the right to bear arms.
Whereas I don't mind the flip-flop on the money thing. That was just plain smart.
Yeah, me too. I don't have a big problem with that.
And
so,
John McCain says, "Yeah, well, I can't be in charge of the 527s. Well, that means, you know, Obama's going to need all the money he has in the world to fight, you know, 300 years of racism.
Well, I think it was a wise move, and we can talk after the election about trying to repair the campaign finance system, but his submission to the $84 million limit was not going to help any of these issues.
No.
And so I'm not focused on that at all.
But
FISA and these Supreme Court decisions really troubled me.
Yeah.
And on faith-based, the way he describes it is that if you are a religious group, you can get federal dollars, but you have to comply with the same rules of a secular nonprofit. And so if this does function the way he's describing, then Catholic charities would have no special advantage over the Sunshine Foundation in applying for money to run a soup kitchen in Capitola. And if that is true, then I can sit still for it. But Barry,
never need a soup kitchen in Capitola.
Barry Lynn,
pretty wealthy, you know, community. Go ahead.
Barry Lynn, who of course hosts a program on KRXA and is head of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, was on television last night with Keith Olbermann and made a lot of good points that these things can be funded without going through any White House office of faith-based. And so, yeah, it's a sop to certain political groups. And Barry Lynn pointed out that as a Democrat, Barack Obama has precious chance of really scoring big with the evangelical vote. So I have mixed feelings about it. But again, Billy, for me, the FISA thing is the most critical issue of the moment.
And the question then becomes, you know, which is better, to track towards the middle or to lose the enthusiasm of the left? I understand the left has no place to go, but I think that enthusiasm and that I'm different thing is getting lost, and that might be more valuable than this.
Let me recommend a column that Arianna Huffington has up on the homepage of the Huffington Post, because she makes that case. And it's not about progressive politics and her individual position. She says, as a matter of cold calculation, do not turn away from your base. I think she makes a compelling argument. Thank you, Billy. Good to talk to you. 888-5 Peter B. More of your calls straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Checking traffic on KRXA, we start out in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Bear Creek Road right after Highway 17 looks like we have a stalled big rig trailer that's stuck out there in the right-hand lane. CHP is sending out a tow truck, though, to move it off the roadway. Until then, you are going to see a backup behind it, especially on Bear Creek Road. Prunedale, Langley Canyon Road at San Miguel Canyon Road. It looks like a stalled vehicle is partially blocking a lane through there. CHP advises that it's been out there since last night, so traffic's pretty much adjusted to it. Just a little bit of slowing now as a tow truck hits the scene. Very slow traffic Monterey County due to the Basin Complex fire. Highway 1 is closed for a 31-mile section between the Point Sur Naval Facility and the town of Lucia. Alternates include Highway 101 to West 68 if you're headed southbound, or you can take Highway 101 to West 46th if you're headed in the northbound direction. This report is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know that a flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb? Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. That's traffic on KRXA.
Listen on, KGOE fans, and call in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. Caroline from Carmel Valley called in and reports that they are now evacuating Andrew Malera State Park. Big Sur and the Esalen area were evacuated earlier today, and I did see a report that the fire has jumped across fire lines, so it remains, shall we say, uncontained, and my heart goes out to people affected by this in the Monterey and southern portions there, just below Monterey on the central coast. So I hope you stay safe and do everything you can to protect yourself, even if you can't preserve your property. Andy in New York is a regular on the program and has called again today. Hello, Andy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Not too bad.
Hey, that was neat that you had Esther Kaplan on.
Well, we're going to have her on again next week because we had a little screw-up in our communication and didn't get her number in time. And Katrina Monday, is that right? Esther? Yeah. Yes, Monday she'll be on with us.
Yeah, because she does a daytime show on Sundays, and I wondered what she did for a day job. I didn't know she worked for the Nation.
Yeah. So Monday at 4 Pacific, that's 7 Eastern for you, Andy.
Okay. Well, what I called about is, I think, Billy you had on.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the same thing. I mean, what a disappointment. I mean, Obama with this, the FISA, which I know you've been talking about the past week or so, and this faith-based initiative just knocked me over. The apology for Wes Clark, he's given an affirmation of the death penalty. You know, you're not going to get anything out of him to try to have some moratorium there. I mean, this guy is running so far to the right, it just kills me. Now I don't know, where does he stand? What does he stand for? To me, he's not standing for anything. His first move is to be conciliatory. It is to cave in. It's to be almost cowardly. I mean, where do you go with this guy?
Well, I don't want to defend these moves that I've criticized, but when I put on a different hat, you know, and look at it in pure political terms, I think that Obama is recognizing that you and I are going to vote for him almost no matter what. Some of us will defect, perhaps, but, you know, for the most part, we're locked in. And so he's trying to expand his appeal. He's trying to reach out to people who used to vote Republican but have had too much or at least enough. And so I understand up to a point that he is trying to appeal to as large of a cross-section of the population, the voting population, as possible. But we have to ask that our concerns be honored and that our early support of him be reciprocated so that, you know, we don't see him just peeling off every issue and saying, well, I don't have to worry about the progressives on that or that or that. And that's why I think the FISA bill is so important. And I'm asking people to focus on that and spend a little time over this holiday weekend to try to drive that point home to him.
Yeah, that's the calculus he's using. But like you said, if he doesn't bend on this and make some kind of a diplomatic move here with the progressives, I think there's going to be some problems.
Yeah.
And if not, you know, maybe not the vote, but at least the enthusiasm and people going out of their way to campaign for him.
Yeah, gotcha.
Might
Andy,
be a real problem.
I want to jump to another call real quick. Call me again soon. Steven Salinas, you got a quickie. Go ahead.
Oh, man, thank you very much. Hey, the FISA deal is huge, and I want to know why the Dems can't run the clock out on it.
Well, they could have run it out if they'd held firm in the House and just not, you know, coughed up a bill. But now that the House has, and we know that the vote count in the Senate is so weak, there's very little chance that the Democrats can run out the clock. I think the best hope, Steve, is to separate out the immunity, have a separate vote on that, and at least the American people will know who stood with progressives on that matter. Thank you, Steve. We're going to return with Robert Dreyfus and talk about Obama's foreign policy team.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor authentic Chinese dishes like congee and juk at Jim's Restaurant, 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. West Coast dock workers are nearing the deadline to settle a new labor contract. Members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union were locked out for 10 days back in 2002. The union represents about 25,000 workers on the West Coast. The old six-year contract expires Tuesday at 5 p.m. Talks are continuing, but details on where things stand aren't being released either by the union or management. Is offshore drilling for oil in the U.S. going to lower the price you pay for gas at the pump? Not a chance. The Center for Economic and Policy Research says if offshore drilling is opened up, as Republican presidential candidate John McCain wants to do, it will be close to a decade before the first oil can even be extracted from the currently protected offshore sites. The Energy Information Agency says peak production from offshore U.S. sites would be an estimated 200,000 barrels a day in 20 years' time. That's just 0.2% of projected world production, and it's far too small to have any significant impact on prices. Starbucks is closing up nearly 600 shops across the country, a move that would result in the loss of more than 12,000 full and part-time jobs. That size of a cut could amount to 7% of the coffee company's global workforce. Earlier this year, the company had only planned on closing 100 stores. It's also adjusting the number of stores it plans to open in the coming fiscal year down to 200 stores. How many times did Walmart violate Minnesota state labor laws? Jesse Russell has the number.
2 million times. That is how many times Dakota County Judge Robert King Jr. says Walmart violated labor laws by cutting worker break time. The ruling came on Monday as part of a class action lawsuit, and the world's largest retailer has been ordered to pay $6.5 million in damages. For Walmart, that $6.5 million is a drop in the bucket, but a flood could be coming in October. That's when a jury will assign civil penalties and punitive damages to the company. The class action lawsuit covers 56,000 Minnesota Walmart employees who worked for the company between September 1998 and January 2004. Walmart is considering an appeal of the judge's decision.
New York's Department of Labor announced plans on Monday to invest nearly $26 million in the state's workforce. Since 2000, the state has watched federal funding for workers decline from $305 million to a proposed $136 million in the 2009 federal budget. $6.2 million of the state's investment will go toward Advance New York, a program that helps businesses train workers in necessary skills that lead to career growth. You can now get Workers Independent News on your cell phone. It's a free call. Just dial 425-527-7001. That's 425-527-7001 for Wynn News on your cell phone. You've been listening to Wynn, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, are you driving around looking for a coffee shop with free internet? Right here in Pacific Grove, you'll find Black Forest Espresso, a fun and friendly place to hang out. We have a large espresso bar ready to make any gourmet drink, homemade wraps, mochas, lattes. How about 100% fruit smoothies and old-fashioned milkshakes with 14 flavors? Black Forest is also the only place to get soft-serve, fat-free frozen yogurt. We're the last hometown coffee shop at the Country Club Gate Shopping Center at Forest and David next to Save Mart Pacific Grove. Check out blackforestespresso.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Last night, our pal Country Joe McDonald, with 2,052 of his close friends, set a new Guinness World Record. They all played this song together in honor of Woody Guthrie.
As I was walking over the highway, I saw above me and in the skyway, I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled and followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond desert. And all around me, a voice was calling. Yeah, this land was made to win. This land is your land. This land is my land. California, New York Island. The river forest, the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land was made to win.
I can only imagine the wall of sound. 2,052 people with folk guitars in a park in Concord, California, Tuesday night, led by Country Joe McDonald, who, of course, has been doing a tribute show to Woody Guthrie over the last year or two. And that just tickles me. If anybody knows how to get a recording of that, let me know. Maybe I should give Joe a call. But I would like to hear it. It's one of my all-time favorite songs. Robert Dreyfus returns to our program today, a journalist who writes for The Nation and many other publications. Bob, how you doing?
I am doing really well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing okay. We're, when I separate out, I'm personally fine and healthy and all that.
Yeah.
I'm struggling, along with many of my listeners, with the recent rightward tilt of Barack Obama. And we were talking just before you joined us about the FISA law and imploring Barack Obama to take a firmer position about that and to at least oppose the telecom immunity. But on a number of issues, he has shifted from what was, a fairly progressive position. I don't want to tag him with any unfair labels. But he has been accentuating his own faith, his support of gun ownership in the Supreme Court decision, and his support for capital punishment, even criticizing the Supreme Court for drawing a line about its implementation in the Louisiana child rape law. So I won't tag you with those issues because you primarily write about foreign policy issues. And you have a great piece that is available today at thenation.com and will appear in the July 21 print edition of the magazine, entitled Obama's Evolving Foreign Policy. And let me start off with the new cast of advisors who he has recently been talking to, and you discuss this in the article. We've seen Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, former Defense Secretary Bill Perry, Senator Sam Nunn of Georgia, Susan Rice, who came out of the Clinton administration, and a number of others, including Lee Hamilton. And frankly, I've had enough of Lee Hamilton. But my point here is that there is concern that while in the past he was getting foreign policy advice from progressives like Joe Cirincione, who used to be at the Center for American Progress, now at the Plowshares Fund, and Larry Korb, a former Reagan administration official who's also at the Center for American Progress, now it's a group of people mostly with ties to the Clinton administration.
Well, you know, that's only partially true. On foreign policy, I'm not sure that his views have suddenly taken some kind of turn. Most of his foreign policy team was put together at the beginning of 2007, and he hasn't changed over the past, 14, 16 months. He's always actually been a fairly conservative, centrist, cautious establishment type on foreign policy, and the team, the core team around him, people like Anthony Lake, who was Clinton's national security advisor, and Susan Rice that you mentioned, and Richard Danzig, who is former Secretary of Navy, who's his chief military advisor, and three or four other people, that's his core group, and I interviewed most of them. They've been on his team for 16 months now, at least.
Mm-hmm.
His big speech, his signal foreign policy speech, was delivered last year in Chicago. And he wrote a big piece for Foreign Affairs magazine also last summer. So all of this, is a track record that I looked at, besides talking to his advisors, that is not really doesn't make him sound very hopeful as a candidate. Now, the people that you mentioned, like Bill Perry and Madeleine Albright, they've recently kind of come into his campaign when Hillary Clinton dropped out. They were supporters of Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear whether they're really advising his campaign. They're kind of, I think, one or two circles outside the inner circle.
Well, they showed up to a meeting, and I don't want to I don't want to read too much into that, because some of that could have been an effort to reach out to Clinton voters.
Oh, saying, I think it is, yeah.
Saying, hey, look, I'm talking to her foreign policy team. You can trust me on that.
Yeah, and it gives him this, this perspective that he's now, the Democratic Party candidate, and therefore all of the Democratic Party establishment is going to rally around him. But if you look at his, the good side of the ledger on Obama, it's obvious that he'll make a bunch of changes from President Bush's foreign policy, including obviously drawing down forces in Iraq and starting to talk to rogue states, quote-unquote, like Iran and Cuba. He would end torture and close Guantanamo and try to build up ties with our allies and all of that. I think he would also try to put the threat of terrorism in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things that are very, very troubling about Obama. For me, the biggest issue is the way he kind of uses his idealism to support a very aggressive-sounding democracy promotion effort overseas, which could involve the United States in intervening in many ways in many countries all over the world. He seems to want to go in and rescue and rebuild failed and failing states in Africa and Asia. But also, he's tied himself very closely to the Pentagon. He won't even consider budget cuts in the bloated Pentagon budget. He's talked about expanding the size of the Army and the Marines and the Special Forces and the CIA. He wants to expand NATO, which is really a fairly controversial notion, especially among leftists and progressives. And, of course, it doesn't make the Russians happy. So in all of these areas, it's more like Obama is, while breaking with Bush, is going to bring us back to the bipartisan or establishment foreign policy consensus that governed this country in the 50-plus years after World War II, the when sort of Republicans and Democrats agreed on things like, you know, NATO and the Cold War and the Gulf War in 1990-91 and so forth. And so I don't see a lot of new thinking in the Obama team. And as I said, I've talked to most of them quite at length for this piece.
I want to come back to the nation-building piece, but what's significant to me, Bob, is the speech that he gave at AIPAC. And this occurred after he was, you know, pretty much safely in command of the nomination. And what he offered was very little daylight between him and the Bush administration on matters related to Israel. And, you know, he promised, I'm trying to find your quote here, that, you know, he basically would protect Israel at all costs. And you point out that he's even ready to throw another $30 billion at Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I was at that AIPAC speech. I sat there not too far from Obama and listened to him deliver that speech. And he certainly gave a lot of red meat to a hardline pro-Israeli audience. About 7,000 people attended that AIPAC conference. And it's clear that he's not going to give an inch, at least in the campaign, on anything to do with Israel. He said not a word in that speech about Palestinian suffering, about Palestinian rights, about settlements in the West Bank, about the wall that's being built around the West Bank to kind of confine them all, and all the roadblocks and checkpoints and all, you know, everything else that goes with the kind of Israeli occupation policies in the West Bank. I think it's, and as again, I talked to his advisors, I think it's absolutely impossible that between now and November he'll make any kind of changes in that. Yet when you talk to people who know the people who are advising him, they kind of are hopeful. They say, well, you know, but that's not what they really think. And, you know, maybe when he's elected, he'll strike out in a different direction. And that's, you know, I don't like that because
me either. I'm a little uncomfortable because for a fair amount of time I have been describing both the attraction and my concerns about Barack Obama, that he appeals to our hopes and aspirations, and we then project them onto him. Even though he's never explicitly said, Peter B., I agree with every one of your positions, and when I'm president, no matter what I said during the campaign, I'm going to deliver for you. And so it is difficult because part of me wants him to win so badly that I'm willing to at least mentally try to put aside some of these things that conflict. And at the same time, politically, I've been burned enough before that I say, well, wait a minute. I can't let my hope get spiraling out of control.
Well, I think that it's clear that Obama, if he were president, is not, absolutely not, going to inaugurate some new dawn in American foreign policy. I think he will be a very cautious and incremental president who will do many of the positive things that he's talked about, but will also, fall back on some people might call them the tried and true planks of American foreign policy. Some people might call them the tried and false planks, things that just haven't worked, that have made, you know, things worse in many parts of the world. And so I think there's a lot to worry about, and it means that people who are engaged and active in politics need to use the leverage that they have and the influence they have as citizens and voters to try to push Obama in the direction that they think he needs to go. I think it's clear that he is something of a blank slate, and he doesn't have a track record. He doesn't have a lot of evidence going back 5 and 10 years about what he thinks on these issues. And so we're stuck really looking, well, is it him? Is it his advisors? Is it what he's saying that he thinks he has to say to get elected? And it's really kind of a tangle and hard to unravel. What I tried to do is this in this piece, it's quite lengthy, is to look at the actual evidence of what kind of a commander-in-chief he would be. And I do have to say, like you, I find it troubling.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Dreyfus. Got a caller who wants to talk about Iran. We'll do that next. You can join us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I recommend this article. You can read it at thenation.com or spring for a copy of The Nation's July 21st edition. It's called Obama's Evolving Foreign Policy. More with Robert Dreyfus in a moment on The Peter B. Collins Show.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We start out in Prunedale, Langley Canyon Road at San Miguel Canyon Road. We have a stalled vehicle that's partially blocking the lane, but CHP believes it's been out there since last night, so traffic's pretty much adapted around it. Do watch out for slowing, though, once CHP and tow trucks hit the scene. That's when you'll really start to see slowing, especially for looky-loos. Monterey County, still long delay south of Big Sur due to the Basin Complex fire. Highway 101 is closed for a 31-mile section between the Point Sur Naval Facility and the town of Lucia. If you're looking for alternates, of course, Highway 1. If you're headed in the southbound direction, you can take 101 to West 68 or to West 46 if you're headed in the northbound direction. Both of those will get you back onto Highway 1. Santa Cruz, Highway 1 southbound before Morrissey Boulevard. We still have an accident. Looks like it's mostly cleared out. Three vehicles were involved. Traffic's still a little bit slow as you head around Morrissey Boulevard on 1 southbound. This report is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to a car on fire? The heat destroys electrical and safety systems. Find out about fire damage. Ask your used car dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. That's traffic on KRXA.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Experience the magic of Scotland and Ireland without ever leaving Monterey County. The 41st Annual Monterey Scottish Games and Celtic Festival will be held on Saturday and Sunday, July 5th and 6th, at the beautiful Toro Park on Highway 68 in Salinas. The Scottish Festival offers fun activities for the whole family, including great athletic events like the famous caber toss. You'll enjoy Scottish and Irish entertainers, great crafts, tasty British food and sheepdog demonstrations. Enjoy the colourful mass pipe bands and Highland dancers, and don't miss the Saturday evening barbecue. Special Sunday entertainment with pipers and dancers. Put on your kilts, grab your bagpipes, or just come on down to the 41st Annual Monterey Scottish Games and Celtic Festival. Information and advance tickets are available at montereyscottgames.com or call 831-333-9423.
Time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. Obama's evolving foreign policy.
People moving up.
Is it a ball of confusion? Robert Dreyfus, new article in The Nation, available at thenation.com, and I found a quote I'd like to read to you from Bob Dreyfus's piece. Obama has refused to rule out going to war against Iran in the event that Tehran moves forward with its nuclear program in defiance of international opposition. Even if it was a grudging nod to political expediency, his June 4 speech to AIPAC impressed hawkish Jewish leaders. Quote, I will do everything in my power to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Everything in my power. Everything, he stressed. Adding, I will always keep the threat of military action on the table. He qualified his previous willingness to meet with Iran's leaders, saying he'd talk to the appropriate Iranian leader at a time and place of my choosing, if and only if, it can advance the interests of the United States. Ratcheting up his earlier rhetoric, Obama said he supported banning the export of refined petroleum to Iran, which would have a devastating effect on Iran's economy and could lead to a U.S.-enforced naval blockade of Iran. Obama also sided with the White House and the many neoconservatives, including Senator Joe Lieberman, by saying that the Quds Force of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps has rightly been labeled a terrorist organization. Now, Bob, these are troubling comments from Senator Obama, and in particular that last one was an issue of contention that was used against Hillary Clinton. I criticized her for her vote on that Senate resolution, the Kyle Lieberman resolution, that named the Quds Force a terrorist organization. That is a potential pretext for a U.S. military action.
Yeah, and, you know, Obama didn't vote on that, but he said he was against, they would have voted against that.
That's what I remember.
It was a, of course, it was a broader and more complicated resolution than simply the Quds Force thing that you referred to now.
Indeed.
But it is all of those things that you said are very troubling. Now, you have to match that against the fact that Obama says that he would talk to Iran, and that he understands that we need to offer Iran, you know, a mix of carrots and sticks in order to get them to move off the dime in mm-hmm. terms of their commitment to developing a nuclear energy program in defiance of criticism from most of the world, including the UN and Russia and China, that are unhappy with Iran's actions.
And I direct our listeners to go to thenation.com and look for your earlier report from your trip to Iran in March of this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think the question of what to do about Iran is you know, extremely complicated one.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he ought to be emphasizing, and I do think he's doing it for electoral purposes to show that he's a tough guy. I don't think he ought to be emphasizing that, military action is on the table, because that's utterly and completely counterproductive. There's never been an instance where diplomacy is aided by the threat, you know, of military action if you don't do what we want in the diplomacy. It doesn't work that way. Countries don't respond under pressure, and as James Dobbins told me, who was a former American ambassador and someone who worked with Iran closely after 9/11 over Afghanistan, he said every single time we've ever tried that, we end up going to war. In other words, mm-hmm. by putting it on the table, you end up having to use it. So I don't think Obama, helps himself, helps the country, helps move diplomacy with Iran along this year by talking about military action. Maybe he thinks, and I don't know if this is true or not, that it helps him with voters.
In Florida.
it neuters, you know, the ability of Senator McCain to mm-hmm. call him an appeaser, which he did after President Bush made that charge.
Let's talk to Richard in Pacific Grove. Richard, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Robert Dreyfus.
Thank you, Peter and Robert. Excellent conversation, and it's a good segue to what I want to talk to you about is the House and Senate resolutions that are calling for a blockade of Iran. And has Obama commented about it?
I don't know. Bob, has he talked about the House resolution that does explicitly call for a naval blockade?
I don't believe he said anything about it, and he has not called for any such blockade himself, but I mean, obviously that would be a stupid and provocative thing to do, and I've been around for decades, and I know that House resolutions have gotten passed on all kinds of kooky things, and most people around the world, in other, you know, parts of the world, don't take them too seriously. I don't think we should either. What the House votes on doesn't mean a hill of beans in terms of what America might actually do.
One of the things that concerns me is, I understand it's about 170 co-sponsors, and I don't hear anybody talking about it. I wonder why.
Well, I mean, if the House made our foreign policy, it would be worth worrying about, but they don't. This is a bunch of election-minded congressmen, trying to look tough, but they can pass a resolution, as they've done many times, that the United States should move its embassy to Jerusalem, and we've never done that.
But, Bob, what's more troubling is Seymour Hersh's report that the House leadership and the Senate leadership went along with the Bush administration's request to divert $400 million to covert and special ops related to Iran, some of them inside the country.
Yeah, I am troubled by that. And, it raises a lot of questions about what that actually means. I think part of that covert operation in Iran is apparently directed toward stealing information and finding out what Iran is actually doing with its nuclear program, and that's a long part of the CIA's mandate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to the extent that they're involved in covert actions beyond information gathering, that's very troubling. What I've heard about what Hersh reported is that they're not engaged in, assassinating people or trying to stir up violent rebellions or any of that. They're perhaps making political contacts with people in Iran.
Bob, I'm out of time, but thank you for joining us, and I want to direct people to thenation.com to read your article. Thanks a lot. We'll talk soon.
Thank you very much.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. There's concern now that the nation's largest automaker could be done in by this weak economy and soaring gasoline prices. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus.
GM is really in a precarious situation right now, probably more so than the other automakers. Let's remember, Ford actually did manage to report a profit, albeit a modest one recently, showing that its turnaround efforts are starting to take hold. However, GM is quickly running out of cash, and now at least one Wall Street analyst believes that bankruptcy is not impossible.
Merrill Lynch says GM needs up to $15 billion to keep going, and it needs to turn sales around. As the price of crude oil rose above $143 a barrel, President Bush said Americans should put pressure on Congress.
Now, to say you ought to be opening up ANWR and Outer Continental Shelf and increasing oil shale exploration for the sake of our consumers, as well as become less dependent on oil.
The Colombian military, with an assist from U.S. intelligence, rescued 15 hostages held by leftist rebels at a remote jungle camp. The captives included Ingrid Betancourt, a one-time candidate for president of Colombia, and three American contractors. CBS News correspondent David Martin has their story.
Mark Gonzalez, Thomas Howe, and Keith Stansell were civilians working for the Pentagon when their plane was shot down by anti-government guerrillas in 2003. Since then, they had only been seen in so-called proof-of-life videos released by the guerrillas to prove their hostages were still alive.
Hi, Mariana. I'm sending you this note on the 22nd of October, 2003.
2007.
A total of 15 hostages were freed, all without a shot being fired.
The operation was long in the planning. Colombia's defense minister says military intelligence agents infiltrated the rebels and persuaded the man in charge of the hostages that arrangements had been made to take them to the group's supreme leader. She'd been missing for a week. Today, the body of 12-year-old Brooke Bennett was found in Randolph, Vermont. She was last seen with an uncle who allegedly planned to force her into a child sex ring. For now, state police say they'll charge him with kidnapping. Most of the people remaining in Big Sur, California, were ordered out today as a huge